PeoplesInternetRadio.com. Welcome one and all. Vin here, folks. Apparently 9:05. Of course, as always, depending on who you ask. And the date seemingly is the 22nd of February 2015. Ooh, so many things have happened during the week. It's hard to know where to begin. Well, I'll start with what happened today. Great meetup today. Plenty showed up. And a couple of faces we hadn't seen in quite some time. Always good to see everybody and press the flesh and talk things through as always. Actually quite a big meetup today. I think if the weather's holding, and I think it's going to, next Sunday, the first Sunday of March, I think we'll shift back to Ardgill and Castle if everyone is agreeable. If anybody's disagreeable, let me know. But if we don't hear anything in between now and then, yeah, I think we'll go back to the castle. I miss being outside. And, you know, it's great when I wear the little Crocs, so it's great to take the, you can just slide them off and get your toes into the grass. Cup of tea in the chat, and there is shelter there if we're stuck, you know, but I don't like the shopping centre meetup. I do much prefer it in Ardgill, so as soon as we can get back there, the better, as far as I'm concerned. Let me know what you think in the chat box. As always, if you want to call in, 00353 144 3309. Where does one begin with the events of the last week and a half? I suppose I'll address a couple of things. The water meter guys who are imprisoned. Should they be in prison? No. Of course not. It's ridiculous to even think they should be in there. Do I think what they're doing is a good idea with the hunger strike and the fluid strike? No, I really don't think that's a good idea. I think what's going to happen is more than likely they'll be force-fed. Maybe not force-fed, but they'll certainly have liquids forced into them. And that's really, really not a pretty thing to happen. And I feel sorry for them and all that if that does happen. But I really would rather they called that off. I think that's a little extreme, guys. I'd be worried about those people in that situation. Because the state, as it stands, the so-called, those claiming to be some form of a state, I can't even say state, because they're not the state, folks. So the, let's call it the pseudo-state. How's that? Pseudo? Pseudo-state. Yeah. The pseudo-state, they're desperate for this. They are absolutely desperate for water meters, and whatever deal they've done, they are carrying on, it would seem, regardless. And that means they're desperate. And when they're desperate, it's dangerous for we the people. Now, I think it can collapse other ways, as in if people just simply don't pay the bill, use the methodologies we've been talking about here for years now. Harry's been talking about them. We've always talked about it. Very simple solution. The return to sender. If a so-called purported bill comes in, hey, if you don't recognize whoever it's from, have the decency to return property that doesn't belong to you. I mean, it's just decency, right? Common courtesy. It's not yours. You didn't create it or make it. Have the common courtesy to return it to whomever may own it. Now, because it was some other third party, namely the postal system, that took it to you, well, that same postal system, seemingly, will return it to them for you. Well, why not let that happen? That way you don't even have to contract directly with the entity. I think a lot of people need to think that one through. I've heard people get this confused. They say, well, if I return to sender, am I contracting? No, you're not returning to sender. That's an instruction you're given to the postal system to return it to sender. And they will. They will. They do it all the time. They've been doing it for donkey's years. Okay, on to the tricolour, which, where do you begin on this? It's on so many levels. It's been twisted and changed that apparently it wasn't who we were told said it. Originally, it was, what's her name now? I did have a note of it earlier and I can't see it here in front of me. But it was along the lines of that, the people can't be using our flag. And of course they're implying it was the tricolour was their flag. And I did have it. If somebody has the link to it there again, please chuck it in the chat box. I had her name. Her name was Catherine. No, I've not seen her here now. If it was Catherine something or other. She was the Lord Mayor of Dublin in 2005, I think. Let me just see. Catherine Lord Mayor. Catherine, Lord Mayor of Dublin. I'll do a Google search on that. That should get it. Catherine Bourne, Fine Gael, pardon me, Catherine Bourne. And apparently Catherine Bourne has suggested that use of the tricolour should not be allowed by protesters, and she used the terminology "our flag." Now, it's not their flag. In fact, it's not even the flag of the Free State government. It's not the flag of the 1937 pseudo-government either. And I'll tell you why I say that. There was a very famous man who's known the world over. His name was Edward Bernays. Edward Bernays made a very famous statement slash declaration. He was famous because he was an expert propagandist. And what an expert propagandist said once, apparently, was, and I'm going to paraphrase here because I don't have the direct quote here in front of me. He said something along the lines of, "First, they steal the words, then steal the meaning of the words." Cast your mind back. In 1922 in Ireland, well, what did they do? First, they stole the words. They called the new construct Dáil Éireann. It wasn't Dáil Éireann. Dáil Éireann signifies what happened in 1919 on the 21st of January. That was Dáil Éireann. What happened under the pseudo-state, Free State, they stole the words, they stole all the emblems, they stole the flag, and then they stole the meaning of the words. They stole the meaning of the emblems, they stole the meaning of the flag. They changed everything, everything. Now, you might say, well, that's just one case, Vin. Can you mention another case where the same thing happened, that the Crown did the same thing? Absolutely I can. They did the same thing in India via the East India Company. And what they did was, I actually have a link on this site. I put it up. It was to do with the genocidal famine, so-called famine, pseudo-famine, but definitely genocide, where they pulled the same thing in India in 1770. And, of course, they did a pre-trial test run in Ireland, of course, in 1740. But in India, what they did was quite interesting in this sense, because what they did was they went into India, the East India Company, with its royal charter, its crown royal charter, did a deal with the Raj, and then effectively took over. And what they did then was, at the time, the people would tithe 10% of their crop, their yield, as a form of a tax, if you will. It wasn't really a tax, it was a tithe to the Raj. Now, the East India Company, when they took over, they kept this going, you see, but they didn't tell people it wasn't going to the Raj. They kept calling it a tithe, not a tax. It became a tax with the East India Company, but it was called a tithe still. Now, the idea of the tithe with the Raj and his people was, their arrangement was that if the people hit hard times, all that they had tithed would tithe them over. Remember that? To tithe me over. I would store something. And if the people needed it, it came back to the people. If the people did not need it, it became the wealth of the Raj to do and to dispose of as he pleased. As he pleased. So it became, if you will, his wealth because the people didn't need it that year and he was welcomed to it. The East India Company went in there, lied effectively by omission, just like they did when they came here. I don't mean the East India Company, I mean the Crown. The Crown came to Ireland and lied. They lied, by omission, to form a pseudo-state, a suzerainty. They did not form a state. They called it a state, but it was a suzerainty. Now, if you don't know what a suzerainty is, I've given the link plenty of times, type it into Google or go to Wikipedia and look up suzerainty. Suzerainty does not have sovereignty. They do, however, have apparent independence. In other words, they look like they're independent until something external has to be determined, i.e. international relations or something of that nature. But they're still operating, if you will, by the good graces of. So in other words, think of if you have a house and you build a garage at the side of your house and you say to your eldest son or eldest daughter or whomever, yeah, you can live in the garage and you can be independent, son. You convert it and you put a shower and all that stuff in there and you say you can live in there and you can be independent. And he can do. He can live in there and, you know, we can have his friends around and everything can be nice and fine. But, there's a but. He's still living under your wing. For full sovereignty, he'd have to be no longer under your wing. You'd have to sign that property over to him. But if you don't do that, he can't contract with somebody to do something to that property without your say-so. You're okay. You got to make the nod. You make the determination. And that's the way a suzerainty works, effectively. And that's what the Free State was. It was a pseudo-state, a suzerainty. And that gave birth to the 1937 Constitution. And that's a pseudo-constitution, too. And that formed another pseudo-state. And that, too, does not have a source of sovereignty. The 1922 Constitution, the source of sovereignty for that was the Royal Crown Monarch structure. That's why they had to make oath under that system and structure. In 1937, they removed that idea or notion, but they did not necessarily remove the fact that it was still under that system. In fact, it's very clear it was under that system. I mean, you only have to look around the country now to see what's happening to figure out. Look, we've been saying it here for donkey's years. The Crown is still controlling Ireland, whether we like to admit it or not. And if you're not seeing it, well, quite frankly, you haven't got your eyes open. How you may feel about it and how I may feel about it is kind of separate, folks. We're just dealing with logic and reason here. Logic and reason dictates that is the way it is, whether we like it or not. Now, you see, Dáil Éireann was formed and became the Sovereign Republic of Éire, 21st of January 1919. Even they don't deny that, even though the Crown supposedly outlawed it. The Crown said it was illegal. But we didn't say it was illegal. The Irish people didn't have a referendum and make a determination that it was illegal. So we never disbanded it or took it apart or removed it. Ergo, it's still there. It's still in existence, even if you don't know about it. It's still there. And of course, it's been maintained in that position in trust only by Billy Maguire and the Irish Republican Brotherhood. That's where it exists. Now, people might say, but Vin, these are all fictitious ideas. Well, sure, everything's a fictitious idea. But what type of ideas do you want to live with? That's really the decision you have to make. Do you want to live with the idea that you're a slave and that you have no control over how you think, how your children think, what you say, what your children, grandchildren may or may not say? What ideas are you going to apply to your life? So that's for you to make that decision. It's not for me to impose this decision upon you. I cannot. I cannot impose anything on anybody. That's my acceptance of your sovereignty. I don't come on this radio and claim to be sovereign. I don't claim to be anything. All I say is, I accept everybody else that I meet are sovereign. And as long as one other person, one other man, one other woman out there holds that same idea in their head, well, they cover me and I'm covering them. And that's the entire human population of this planet covered. Two people only have to agree to that, and that covers everybody. Now, of course, whether people conduct themselves in that manner or not, that's a different situation. But there's some confusion, I think. So I just want to clarify this. So the flag that Fine Gael, Catherine Byrne, pseudo-TD, because she's not a TD, is... I'm going to wear out that term, pseudo, tonight. I can feel it. She's attempting to say our, as if it's somehow theirs. She means their government, I'm assuming that's what she means. However, that's because they, inverted commas, claim to have adopted it. Now, I always thought to myself, why did they always claim to adopt that particular flag? Why did they not claim to adopt the flags that they actually captured in battle? And I thought about that for a while and I went, They didn't capture it in battle. They did not capture the tricolour of green, white and orange in battle. They did capture the flag with the green field with Irish Republic on it. They did capture a few other flags, whatever. But they did not capture that flag in battle. And the way they operate, this is all kind of like, if you will, like voodoo to them, right? The voodoo that they do. And they needed some type of form of capture. So they captured it in fiction land, if you will. They pretended, if you will, that they captured it. And because they were pretending, they used it to facilitate the pseudo-state that they set up, hoping that the Irish people would be duped into believing that somehow, by some transmogrification, that the whole deal somehow would work and it would be fair and just and equitable for all. And I'm sure that's the way it looked for a lot of people, and I'm sure a lot of people were relieved when hostilities stopped on the island and, you know, some form of normality came back into people's lives. And I'm sure, as I say, I'm sure everybody, you know, the general average Joe Soap, I'm sure they were all relieved. But, a comfortable cage is still a cage. A cage with gold bars is still a cage. An intellectual cage is a very cruel device. And if people cannot live and operate within their culture, if their culture is encased and reduced and diminished by an imposition of a foreign culture. Unfortunately, that is what happened. We all know that here. We're all speaking English as if it's our native tongue, which of course it's not. Now, this is not me trying to stir up ideas of nationalism or any of that jazz in you folks. I'm not. I'm simply trying to get you to understand this in the terms of either this is what happened or it's not what happened. How you come to terms with it and whether you agree or not, that's for you to make a determination. This is just as far as I have it figured out in my head. If you disagree, by all means, feel free to let me know you disagree. I have no problem with that. As long as we don't make our disagreements personal, again, I have no problem discussing any of this with anyone. And I will discuss it with anyone. I've noticed a lot of people tend to get personal and emotional when talking about these issues. I shut down when people get emotional with me in relation to these issues, because to me this is not an emotional issue. To me, either this is what happened or it is not what happened. If this is not what happened, I would really appreciate somebody correcting me. I really would. It came up today at the meetup. Somebody mentioned something about, well, hang on a minute, Vin, are you saying, why do you keep mentioning the Crown when you're talking about this legal stuff all the time? And I said, well, unless I missed a meeting, the rebellion in Ireland failed, and nobody's ever claimed a victory since then, so the Crown is still operating here. As I said, unless you know different, well, let me know. And if you know the who, what, where, when, which, and why, well, I'm all ears. I'd be delighted to know. But I've yet to see it. So, as I said, I don't invest emotionally into this. Because if I did, I could imagine my emotions would get... Well, you see, if you bring emotion into something like this, folks, you're abandoning logic and reason quite easily. Or you can do. You're in danger of doing that. It's just like the people in Scotland, the people in Wales. They've been... And indeed the people in England, they've all been duped into believing that they are somehow in an inferior subspecies to those who wear the crown and operate and maintain that idea. I can't believe that all those people believe that, and they say it, oh yep, all the time, I'm a subject. Subject is the equivalent of less than. How can you say, I am less than another, when there's no difference between them and you? How can you say that? You see, to me, that's a lie. It's a straightforward lie. That's all it is. It's not the truth. And I just don't know how else to say it, folks. Look, if somebody, even some alien guy lands in a spacecraft here and he says, oh, here, look, Zachariah Sitchin, for example, was correct. We created you from DNA on this planet that we found in some type of ape-like creature, and we mixed our own stuff in, and that's where we got you from, so we actually own you, your superior being is standing in front of you, bow. I'd be saying, no thanks, you're all right. I'm not looking for them to bow to me either, by the way. I don't want any man or woman to bow to me, and the reason for that is I don't think that's right. Therefore, I don't think it's right that I should bow to any other. I'm not less than. Even if I'm less than intellectually, less than physically, less than in terms of property, less than in terms of anything you care to mention, as a life form, as a sentient, conscious life form, I am not less than, nor more than, any other sentient life form in existence. And that's a fact. That's a fact. Now, if you accept that to be true, well, then that's a fact for you, too. If you do not, then it's not a fact for you, I suppose. I think it's time for a quick music break. Yeah, half hour. And I hadn't played that that track for quite some time, Fade to Grey, but I used to play it all the time. I loved that track, and of course we've lost Steve Strange. He's no longer with us, and pity. But it also it got me thinking of some other old songs that I hadn't heard in quite some time, and this is another one I haven't played. It's an old favourite of mine. I'm going to play this. I'm going to get the kettle on, have a quick cup of tea, and back just after this. Welcome back to peoplesinternetradio.com. Nickel on the chat box. And Vian, what about the phrase sovereign citizen that often gets thrown round? It's a bit of an oxymoron, no? And yes and no, and it depends, is how I'd respond to that, and I'll tell you why. Number one, you can only be a sovereign citizen if you're in a sovereign republic. Otherwise, you can't be. Now, the people who use that phraseology tend to be in America, where a sort of a sovereign republic was supposedly created, formed, again, set of ideas, right? However, America is still under the crown. So over there, because it's still operating by the crown, as is Canada, India, Australia, everywhere, essentially, that the British Empire went, to them, they, of course, become domestic terrorists. Why? That idea terrifies them. The idea that everyone else is sovereign, just like them, terrifies them. Therefore, in their eyes, they are terrorists. So, citizen denotes a state, as Unique Lee would say. Absolutely. Citizen. So, a citizen of a sovereign republic, or a citizen of, a despotic state, shall we say, a citizen of a commercial structure, or a citizen of, you can, that term, citizen, it's kind of interchangeable almost with the idea of participant. If you are a participant, if you partake in, yeah? If you think about it like that. So, if you claim to be a sovereign citizen, and you're not living in a sovereign republic, you're going to have a problem in your life if you're going to try and operate that way, as we've seen has happened in the past. If you talk about sovereignty, even still, you may find you have problems. Okay? So is it an oxymoron? Not in a sovereign republic. It's not, because in a sovereign republic, everybody else accepts and acknowledges everyone else's sovereignty, which is why in a sovereign republic, you can opt in and opt out of your contracts, because if everybody is sovereign, nobody can impose their will upon you. If they're imposing their will upon you, they have collapsed the sovereign republic situation, at least for them and you, right? Or for you, if you're the one being imposed upon. So anybody who imposes upon others, and anybody who relies upon their lifestyle via an imposition unto others, the idea that all are sovereign, that would keep them awake at night, yeah. So much so that the Irish people found out many, many times, through armed conflict down through the last 700-800 years, that this idea of sovereignty being available and free to all terrifies the controllers, those who wish to maintain their position of control and who will use any and all despotic measures to do so, and as many lies and deceits and deception and corruption as they feel necessary to maintain control. Yeah, they're going to call them terrorists. Of course they are. That terrifies them. Okay? That's why they instructed their subjects and servants to, well, kill anybody who says that. Kill them. And they go, certainly, your wish. Let's say they say something like, I wish they were all dead. Certainly, your wish is my command. And they go, bang, 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 bang. That's what they've done. That's a fact. We know that's a fact. We've seen them do it. We've heard of them doing it. We've read it in the history books. That's what they do. They say, they claim they're doing it in service to the sovereign. And she, of course, at the moment, and her, well, she who wears the crown, of course, they all say, we're doing it for her sovereign royal highness. And that's where people think sovereignty and royalty somehow have something to do with each other. They do not. Those terms are not synonymous. They are not synonymous terms. They are attempting to make sure no one else on the planet recognizes and understands the concept of sovereignty. And then, if they actually achieve that tomorrow, then one could argue that royalty and sovereignty would be synonymous then. But they've never, ever managed to do so. So they keep using it in those terms, hoping that one day those terms will become synonymous. Because when that's done, their new world order of whatever idea and notion that they have in their head, whatever the new world order, as far as they're concerned, is going to be, it will be in place. There is going to be a new world order, folks, whether we like it or not. We can see it. However, and this is why this is a very exciting time to be alive, we are going to decide what type of new world order there will be. Is it going to be an oppressive new world order controlled by the few? Or is it going to be a free and voluntary interaction between sovereign men and women doing our best, and I mean our best, to live in harmony with each other, in harmony with nature, and in harmony for the facilitation of future generations being able to progress in that manner. Harmonious relations. That's the choice. That's the choice you have. I can't make the choice for you. Only you can make the choice. It is your choice. They're trying to educate and dumb down as many people as possible so they don't even realize there is a choice. In the chat box from Paddy Maggie, in a country where there is a king, is he not the sovereign and all the rest are subjects? I would say that's the way they would like everybody to think of a Paddy Maggie, but I say that's a lie. I say all are sovereign. All are sovereign. The king, if you will, and that the wearer of the crown, is claiming to be sovereign, and he's claiming all the rest are subjects. Less thans, right? Slaves. Slaves is actually the correct term for subjects. You're either sovereign or you're a slave. There's no grey area. As I said, you can live in a very pretty cage, but you're still a slave. You're still a prisoner. So, is he not the sovereign? As if, is that a factual statement? Yes, factually, he is sovereign. But the reason he is sovereign is because so is everybody else. Even though they might only accept the fact that they're a subject. So, let me try put it this way. Let's say we say, only kings are right-handed. And anybody else who uses their right hand is a domestic terrorist and evil. And only people who use their left hand is socially acceptable because they are less thans. They must use the left hand to do everything, even if predominantly their inclination is to use their right hand. Well, I would say it's a fact that all kings are right-handed, yeah? And all subjects are left-handed. However, it's also a fact that all subjects have the potential to use their right hand too. But they're choosing not to for fear that the right-handed king would chop their head off, or have one of his left-handed agents or guards come in, chop their head off. Why? Well, they're committing treason against their right-handed king. Yeah? It's the same type of deal. It's a logical fallacy. Look, you've heard me talk about logical fallacies here on a regular basis now, because I've been trying to encourage you guys to go to Your Logical Fallacy Is, that website, and have a look. It is a stunning piece of work. It's a sublimely defined of the whole list of logical fallacies that, if you explore, will improve your reasoning and your ability to have a cogent argument with somebody, a cogent discussion, not necessarily an argument. I think people think the word argument implies aggression. I mean, no, a straightforward debate. Either something is correct or it is incorrect. Now, 1 + 1, I believe, equals 2. Yet, using some form of twisted logic, bankers have convinced us all that 1 + 1 = 2. And of course, the point blah blah blah, that's what they call interest. In the old days, it was called usury. And they've convinced people that somehow that's all a good way to operate, and that that's correct. Now, I'm going to show you something here in a minute that I found. And I had a very interesting read there. I was given a loan of a book. It was a fine doorstop of a book, like the size of a phone book, this thing, 900-pager. And I didn't have an awful lot of time to read it, so I had to really speed read through as much as I could possibly get into my head. So I didn't get the whole thing, probably, and I'm still kind of letting some parts of it filter through. So it's a little, it's still a little cloudy in spots on that particular work, but over the next couple of weeks, I'm sure, as it's kind of soaked into wherever it needs to soak in the back of my mind, I'll have it down. But I took a couple of little pictures from it. And I added one to the site today. So I'm going to show you this picture, and I want you to have a little look at this, and this will help you understand why I'm saying what I'm saying, just about some aspects of some of these things, right? So this is to help you, if you will, with some of the logical fallacies that are going along, and this should help you deal with some of these thoughts that you're having, or that you may be having. I don't know what thoughts you're having, of course, but that you may be having. So this one here, I'm going to get the link now, and I'm going to put the link into the chat box window for you. So please do have a little read of this. Let me know when you see that, folks, and we'll read it through together. So the book was called, it's called Constitutional Law, and it was written by Michael Ford. This is Constitutional Law, second edition. Now, as I say, this thing is, it's a phone book, folks, you know, 900 pages. If you dropped this on your foot, you'd break your foot. It's an expensive book. I think, like, if you were to try to purchase this thing brand new, I think you're probably talking something along the, well, about 400 odd quid, right? This is a serious hunk of junk, as they say, right? Now, please let me know in the chat box when you can see that picture. Can you see that picture now? Okay. Hopefully you can see it. So in page 126 of that particular book, Constitutional Law, Second Edition, Michael Ford, at common law, with all other citizens, there is a vast body of legislation that authorizes members of the Garda, sometimes members who are above a specified rank, to arrest, question, seize property, and enter premises, usually on having a warrant, but on certain occasions even without a warrant. That's all correct. Here's the bit I want you to pay attention to. A member of the force, they mean the Garda Síochána Síochána, of course, acting in excess of his lawful powers, will be held liable in damages, for instance, for false imprisonment or trespass to the person or to goods or to land. Now, here's the problem. See if something like that happens to you. There's this GSOG idea operating out there at the moment, and people are saying, okay, there was a Garda, a member of a Garda Síochána under the pseudo-state, operating in some way or fashion, and either they held me falsely and imprisoned me, or they committed trespass to my person, to my goods, to my land, whatever it may be. I'm going to bring my complaint to GSOC or whoever the heck the complaints board is, the Garda complaints board, right? Now, and they'll tell you, we've investigated, more than likely, and there's nothing to see here, right? And people get frustrated and go away, and they scratch their head and think, something strange, I missed something. And I'm saying, yes, you did miss something. But what did you miss? For example, the reason we've been saying here for a long, long time, if somebody identifies themselves to you and they tell you, they must tell you, that they're somehow what they will purport to be a member of a Garda Síochána, and if you say to them, okay, I accept and acknowledge your oath of office and I'm holding you to that office, not the oath, to the office. I'm holding you to your office. Even if you're under pressure, and if he says, I'm a Garda, and even if he's about to grab a hold of you and beat you up, I'm holding you to your office. Right? If that's all you have time to squeeze out, squeeze that out. Why? Well, here's why. Anything he does outside of his office, clearly his office will offer no protection. But if you go in to complain to the people who are saying, well, misconduct in office will be dealt with, he didn't perform the misconduct in office, did he? He performed it outside of that office. So it's the man you've to take and make the complaint against, not the guard. Is that making sense? Think that through. So, for example, let's say there's a man operating as Garda... I don't know, pick a name. But I'm going to pick a name out of the chat box, right? Garda Carrots, right? Your complaint is not against Garda Carrots up until the point that Garda Carrots was conducting himself in accordance with his office. The moment he does something outside of his office, now it's just him, the man, doing it to you. So it's just Mr. Carrots is who you have your complaint against. And that's the usual manner into a Garda station. Hello, I have a complaint against Mr. Carrots. Now, they might say he's a member of the Garda Síochána. I'm not here to complain about the Garda Síochána. I'm here to make a complaint about Mr. Carrots. That makes sense? Why? And explain. Well, for this, this and this. Now, yes, Eddie Bull, it is a bit of a mind-bender. I get you. It is a bit of a mind-bender, folks, but do have a think about it. This is why people have been wondering, how come I'm bringing these complaints and they're never getting anywhere? This is why. At least this is the way I see it. This seems to make sense to me. Ask yourself, does it make sense to you? Again, if it doesn't make sense to you, well, fine. Well, maybe I've got it wrong. By all means, open to correction. Open to correction. But as I read through, and I've read through that entire book, there's a few little humdingers in here. Now, I haven't got them all ready to put up on the site as a screen snips like I have there at the moment. I have about another 40 pages that I've done little screen snips from. Relevant, kind of, at least I believe it's relevant. And what I'll do tonight here, I'll read through a few of them here, just as I still have the screen snips on my computer screen here in front of me. I just haven't put them into PIR yet, but I will do. So, you see, even there you'll see 1984, a legislative provision was made for a Garda complaints board in order to deal allegations of wrongdoing against members of the force. But you see, your allegation of wrongdoing is not against the member of the force, folks. Your allegation or your complaint of wrongdoing is against that man, Mr. Such-and-Such. See, Mr. Such-and-Such is just like you. When he's operating as a Garda Síochána, well, it's only anything he does within his office. But if you've accepted and acknowledged his oath of office and you're holding him to his office, anything he does outside of that, now he is personally, and read it there, look, a member of the force acting in excess of his lawful powers will be held liable in damages. He will be held liable in damages. That means you get to have a civil action against him. You can sue him, in other words. But you don't sue the Garda. You don't sue on Garda Síochána. You're just suing the man. So you could even say, I need to know what his name is. I'm taking a civil action and I need to know this guy's name. They said, well, that's officer or guard such and such, Carrots. Fine, you're going looking for this listener, and I want to take a criminal action against this man. How do I go about it? Or I want to take a civil action against this man. How do I go about it? They'll tell you. You can just use the system for that, folks. That's what it's for. Vin, can a person be falsely imprisoned? There's always one. Thank you, Uniquely, on the chat box. If you believe you're a person, yes, I suppose you can. But I mean, this is, look, it's man, woman, person, all these ideas. They're all just ideas. You know, it's what you mean when you're saying it. But what I'm saying is, when you're talking to these individuals in their offices or whatever it is they think they're in, they still all have Mr. and Mrs. associated with them outside of the office, right? So in the office, in other words, he's Garda Carrots. Outside of the office, he's Mr. Carrots. Yeah? Now, some people say, oh, they're never off duty. Fine. That's fine. Everybody loves splitting hairs around here. We could open a salon. But are you seeing what I'm talking about here, folks? Please let me know whether you're seeing what I'm talking about here. I felt it was important, and let you know that that's there. There was something else in there. Okay, let me just... I'm scrolling through a few of these. What was that one? Private Prosecutions. Here's an interesting one. This is page 431 of that book, Private Prosecutions. Criminal Procedure, Private Prosecutions. Have a listen to this. Before independence. What? Yep, that's what they wrote there. Before independence. Pseudo-independence, anybody could bring a prosecution in respect of every offence. One of the principal changes in legal administration, right there, legal administration, not lawful, not laws, not in law, not in common law, okay, in legal administration introduced in 1924 was the abolition of private prosecutions for indictable offences according to Section 9(1) of the Criminal Justice Administration. In brackets, Act. See, they call it the Criminal Justice Act. It's the Criminal Justice Administration Act, 1924. All criminal charges prosecuted upon indictment in any court shall be prosecuted at the suit of the Attorney General or the Director of Public Prosecutions. The DPP is the Attorney General, effectively. Thus, as regards offences that are triable on indictment, which means most serious offences, private individuals cannot bring a prosecution to conclusion. The state, pseudo-state, possesses a monopoly of the right to prosecute. But private individuals were permitted to initiate prosecutions for indictable offences up to the receiving of information and to the point of return for trial by a district judge. But at that stage, the prosecution concluded, unless it was taken over by the DPP, without the director's intervention, the prosecution could go no further. Private individuals may prosecute most summary offences as, inverted commas, common informers. Now, hold on to your half for this one. Common informers, i.e., as members of the public who are capable of giving information in respect of the commission of an offence. Here's the part where I want you to hold on to your hat. Indeed, when members of the Garda Síochána prosecute summary offences, they do so as common informers. What's that mean? I'll read it again. When members of the Garda Síochána prosecute summary offences, they do so as common informers. Power to prosecute certain summary offences is reserved in various named ministers, bodies or individuals, and to the DPP, a person seeking to commence a prosecution for criminal libel must get the prior authorisation of the High Court. Common informers. Now, how many people have, under cross-examination, ever asked the member of a Garda Síochána sitting in the box, are you here today as a common informer, or how are you here today? Are you here as a member of a Garda Síochána? See, they'd say, yeah. You could say, well, he's just impeached himself. He's not. He's here as a common informer only, and he doesn't know that. He's incompetent. Get him the hell off the stand. Strike his testimony. Strike it. That's your motion now, right? What's your motion? Motion to have everything he just said struck off. Get him or her out of that box. Arrest for questioning. This was another very interesting little section I found. Arrest for questioning. Common law and statutory powers of arrest cannot normally be used in order to hold persons, people, against their will for reasons other than to charge them with some offence. Let me give you that in English. Layman's terms. They're not allowed to arrest you to just ask you questions. They have to, in other words, have had something. They must suspect you of doing some wrong to arrest you, right? Now, I'm going somewhere with this, folks, so have a little listen to this. This is important. Okay. Generally, it is not permissible to arrest for the purpose of questioning or, for instance, until it is possible to initiate extradition or deportation proceedings. According to Walsh J. and People v. Shaw, no person may be arrested, with or without warrant, for the purpose of interrogation or the securing of evidence from that person. In other words, they are not allowed to arrest you just to interrogate you or to secure evidence from you. If there exists a practice of arresting persons for the purpose of assisting the police in their inquiries, it is unlawful. So when you hear that statement, when you hear them say, oh, there's a man helping the police with their inquiries, what they're saying is, there's a guy down the cop shop bumping his gums together. He's not under arrest, which means, in theory, he can walk out the door any second. Or he can just clamp up and shut up and say to them, hey, fellas, unless you're arresting me, I'm a-leaving. Now, they might say, well, if you try to leave, we will arrest you. He should still try to leave, because maybe they will and maybe they won't. They have to have, because if they do arrest you under that idea or notion, well, then clearly there's going to be a problem. The arrest won't be lawful, more than likely. There is no such procedure permitted by the law as holding for questioning or detaining on any pretext except pursuant to a court order or for the purpose of charging and bringing the person detained before the court. Sorry, Vin, did you just say checkpoint on the side of the road? What do you think of that one, folks? You want to hear that one again? Yeah, let's do that one again. There is no such procedure permitted by the law as holding for questioning or detaining on any pretext except pursuant to a court order or for the purpose of charging and bringing the person detained before the court. Any clearer? Let me get real clear. There is no difference between arrest and detain. Detention and arrest is the same thing. If they tell you, or somebody wearing a uniform like that tries to say, oh, I'm not arresting you, I'm just detaining you. That's, I'm not arresting you, I'm just arresting you. That's what they've just told you. And if you think they did so under false pretenses or under false conditions, well, hey, you've got a complaint, and your complaint is for false arrest. Now, that would be against the officer because he didn't hurt you. He didn't violate you physically, unless you were violated, which is different, of course. But if you weren't violated, well, then, you see, that goes to GSOC or whatever the heck it is they call that, Garda Complaints Commission. Am I making sense? Or is that making sense now? Don't worry about it. I'm making sense. Let me know if the ideas are making sense. If that's making sense. Well, anyway, I didn't write this bloody book. I'm only reading now. And I'm trying to give you as best I can what I think it's pointing at, okay? Pursuant to a court order, detained before a court, any other purpose is unknown to the law and constitutes a flagrant and unwarranted interference with the liberty of citizens. Any other purpose is unknown to the law and constitutes a flagrant and unwarranted interference with the liberty of citizens. Detention or arrest simply for the purpose of questioning is forbidden by the European Convention, except during a state of emergency, and where the state in question has derogated from Article 5 in Lawless v. Ireland, this is a court case, section number 3, the Strasbourg Court observed that Article 5, 1c and 3 of the Convention allowed the arrest and detention of a person solely for those purposes, blah, 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 so forth and so on. Now, where to next, boys and girls? Well, let's go here. Personal liberty. This was in chapter 15. Freedom of the individual. You're going to look, whoever wrote this clearly doesn't understand certain aspects of some of the language, and if they did, they're being deceptive, okay? But let's just go along. Freedom of the individual is identified in the preamble to the Constitution as an overriding principle, and personal liberty is implicit in several of its more specific guarantees. In 1765, in his account of the absolute right of individuals, absolute right, mind you, Blackstone placed second on his list personal liberty, consisting in the power of locomotion, of changing situation, of removing one's person to whatsoever place one's own inclinations may direct, without imprisonment or restraint, unless by due course of law. Right, let's try and modernize that a little bit and get it into layman's speak. Although, you may, some of the people who've been on the site a lot longer may recall that word locomotion. Mr. T used to like to use that term. I'm just a locomotin. Somebody say, hey, what are you doing? Well, I'm just locomotin around creation, right? There. In 1789, Declaration of the Right of Man and of the Citizen, personal liberty is described as one of the natural and imprescriptible rights of man. And that document commences by saying that, in respect of their rights, men are born and remain free. That's a humdinger right there. Article 5.1 of the European Convention and Article 9.1 of the UN Convention stipulate that everyone has the right to liberty and to security of person. Now we're into Bunrecht. Although Article 40.4.1 of the, they're talking about the 1937 Constitution here, of the Constitution, addresses liberty in terms of legality. Oof, see that right there? See that? In other words, it's a legal situation, not a lawful one, according to what this guy is saying about Article 40.4.1, by guaranteeing that no citizen shall be deprived of his personal liberty save in accordance with law. As I say, it doesn't say in accordance with positive law, okay? Positive law are statutes, acts, and all that type of jazz. Bylaws, you name it, right? Municipal ordinances, yada, yada, yada. Law is when you beat somebody over the head, you've broken the law. When you hurt somebody, damage property. Just being a general no good individual, right? That's law. So traffic stops, for example, they can't be in accordance with law. They are only in accordance with positive law. Okay? Think it through. This is what I'm talking about, traffic stops, folks. It has long been accepted that laws that unacceptably curtail such liberty are invalid. Persons may not be deprived of their liberty for reasons that are inconsistent with the Constitution, for instance, on account of the opinions, their religion, or their sex or race. Nor may persons be deprived of their liberty through a procedure or in a manner that is unconstitutional. It is implicit in the constitutional scheme that persons may only be deprived of their liberty for good reasons embodied in law and in accordance with fair procedures. Now, cast your mind back a couple of weeks to when you saw the video of the chap who stepped outside of the so-called court, the pseudo-court from the pseudo-state, operating under the Royal Oireachtas down in Cork. Nobody apparently had a problem with anything he said or did in the courtroom. If they did, of course, they would have been straight over to him to arrest him in the courtroom, which they have done so on many, many occasions. People have been arrested. There was an ex-member of the Garda Síochána who became a barrister who was wrestled to the floor of the courtroom in Bray, I believe, not too long ago, Bray County, Wicklow. By all means, look it up, folks, and check it out. He was getting a little bit boisterous, and the judge, I think, instructed someone else to grab a hold of him. There was a tussle, and they and this guy used to be a Garda Síochána, now a barrister, and they wrestled him to the floor and arrested him in that courtroom. Okay? They didn't do that with the chap we saw in the video, right? They allowed him to walk out, no problem, and then suddenly when he gets outside, he's surrounded. For what purposes? Exactly as we have just outlined. Unlawful and illegal purposes. So, my opinion is, in this situation, does that man have a case? Well, what do you say, folks? What do you say? Does he have a complaint? I think he does. I think he does. And I think this book on their constitution, that they claim to be theirs, I think is backs him, his position up completely. Completely. Was there anything else in there I want to talk about? No, I think I'm okay on that one. I'm going to skip through this. I just have a few samples here that I just wanted to get through. Common law. Oh, yeah, this was interesting, right? In DPP v. Fagan, the Supreme Court held that Gardaí also have a common law power to conduct random stops of motor vehicles, even though the driver is not suspected of committing any criminal offence. Right, here's the contradiction, folks. As is abundantly clear from Denham J's dissent, there was no good legal basis whatsoever for this conclusion, which has been rejected in other comparable jurisdictions. For example, in America, it used to be like this. Other common, inverted commas, common law jurisdictions, it used to be repugnant to them that checkpoints were set up. Do you remember a few years ago, for example, Alex Jones on, I don't know what the hell, Alex Jones, InfoWars, yeah? Alex Jones on InfoWars was literally, he nearly bust a gut screaming down the microphone when he found out that warrantless, suspicionless checkpoints were being set up all over America. He went mental. And of course, the Irish people here, we've had them for, as long as most of us can remember. Men and women of the Garda Síochána set up a pop-up checkpoint port in the centre of any particular road they feel like. And as people come ambling along or locomoting along, they prevent them from moving through, and they suddenly start asking questions about this and that and the other, and before you know it, there's an arrest, and you know, you're paying fines, and you're doing all sorts of business deals. They just set up shop. And that used to be deemed, considered, repugnant and disgusting and not allowable. And yet we've been putting up with it for years, and I've been coming on here saying, this is wrong. However, why is it getting out there? Why are they still doing it? Because nobody's ever challenged it. That's why. See, what they do, everything they do is presumed constitutional and presumed lawful until somebody challenges it. And they have to, of course, challenge it in the correct manner, in the correct fashion, to get this thing sorted. When done, could you imagine one court case could literally obliterate every single warrantless, suspicionless Garda Síochána checkpoint? I mean, look, if they want to find out if your car is taxed and issue you a fine, that's easily done. They don't have to stop you locomoting and delay a big row of cars in the middle of the highway and the byways of the land, right? I mean, that's dangerous, if you ask me. That could cause an accident. In fact, I often wonder, have there been accidents caused by situations like that? I don't think they have the right to do it. I don't like them. I mean, if they want to see if my car is taxed or insured, for example, they can come up here and when it's parked outside my house and have a look in the window and issue a fine or a penalty or whatever. They can do that. Should I be stopped and intimidated and asked about... You see, they're smelling your breath. You see, they're stopping you to gather information and they're asking you questions. That's detainment. They are detaining you in order to do what we said they're not allowed to do earlier on. And yet, do you see the contradiction here, folks? That's why you shouldn't roll down your window. Because now, oh, suddenly they say, oh, I think I might smell blah, blah, blah. I might smell alcohol. I might smell marijuana, whatever the hell it is they do. You see where I'm going with this? Okay, I'm going to read a little bit. Doodly doodly doo. A similar example of that court finding a common law power that manifestly did not exist at all was McMahon versus McDonald, where the plaintiff was being sought for extradition to England. Considerable force was used by the Gardaí in order to gain access to where he was living at the time. Think about this one. Which was not authorised by the Extradition Act 1965, because many other comparable acts expressly authorise the use of reasonable force in order to enter a premises or a dwelling. It was contended that resort to force in this particular instance was not authorised and therefore was unlawful. Oh good, I'm just seeing a link that Jimmy put in the chat box there. IrishTimes.com, Paul Murphy seeking an end to hunger strikers. Yeah, good, I hope they do too. I hope they end that. That's I'm not happy that's going on. Anyway, where was it gone? It was contended that resort to force, which yeah, because, right, here's it. Therefore was unlawful. Nor were the circumstances there such as were contemplated in the seminal Seamans case, where the ambit of, that's a new word on me, the ambit of the common law power of forcible entry was defined. Oh shit, I must look that up. Pardon my French. Because the common law does not grant any power to extradite, it seems absurd to conclude that the common law authorises forcible entry of a dwelling for that purpose. Again, as in Fagan, but without citing any authority to support the proposition, it was held extemporary that force was allowed here by the common law. You see, these guys, folks, they love to twist the blame with all this stuff, don't they? Now, here's a humdinger. I don't know what page this is on. I didn't take a picture of the page number. But, however, common law power to detain and to enter on property. Not in. Notice that's to enter on property. That's an interesting turn of phrase there, right? At common law, members of the Garda Síochána and also private individuals... Oh, yeah, no. Right. See, if you're distracted by something else, folks, you're about to type something in the chat box and you're halfway through the sentence, stop, right? Stop and listen to this. I will find the page number for this. I think this is page 125. I think so. I didn't take a picture of the page, but off the top of my head, I think it's page 125. Common law power to detain and enter on property. At common law, members of the Garda Síochána and also private individuals are entitled to stop and arrest persons who are about to commit or who they... Wrong page again. Where's the next page? Where's the next page gone? Vin, where'd you put the next page? Hold on, let me find the next page. Nope. Yeah, I didn't take a picture of the next page. Okay. Somebody did. Who did? I know someone who has a picture of that page. Hang on a sec. Okay, I'm just going to send them a message so they can get that page for me. Sorry about that, folks. Yeah, but that's a humdinger. But essentially what it was saying was that the power of arrest, everyone has it. I've said it here before. Garda Síochána don't get the power of arrest when they become Gardaí, because we all have it. Think about that. We all have it. There it is in black and white in their material. As I've often said here before, we don't need to make anything up. It's in all their material. They're telling you this. I'm just pointing out that they actually believe this too. And there's your proof, inverted commas, as I say. If you want to splash out and get the book, by all means. But maybe somebody might somehow manage to... Well, it'd be real convenient, wouldn't it, if somebody managed to get obtain that book and manage somehow to magically produce what we call a PDF. That would be really, really useful, I think, you know. I'll leave that one to you. How are we doing time-wise? 22:17. I don't have a, by the way, just so you know, I don't have a guest lined up tonight, so, you know, feel free to, if you want to call in, and on topic, folks, not just some rambling ambling, but please try and call in on topic, or if you have something that you do want to discuss, by all means, let me know. Vincent Temp 1 over Skype, 00353144339 over the phone if you want to do that. And somebody's posting script in the chat box. Don't think you want to do that, Derek, so I'm going to delete that for you. I'm going to remove that. And there we go. And there we go. Okay. Yeah, the chat box, you might bugger up the chat box sticking in some script like that, so I'll take it out for you. Okay, I have someone looking for that page for me now. Great, if we can get that, that's great. So yeah, by all means, if you want to call in, there's one from Uniquely. What's the difference between to law and to the law? Is the law referring to the ancient laws of usage and enjoyment, or is writing with the law and at law different? Why is at important? Why is at important? Okay. It's not at that's important. It's before the word law. Whatever you put before that changes the meaning. It's a modifier, right? Modifies what's going on. So at law, to law, by law, for law, of law, as law, as a law, as towards a law, as a common law, as a bylaw, as a municipal rule of a corporation, yada, yada, yada. They're all different. I mean, I could talk about that stuff for literally for hours. I mean, if you want to buy modern legal usage and go to, open it on the first page, and it says an. This entry treats two common problems with the identifiable articles. For advice on using definite and indefinite articles generally, see articles. Choice between and an. The indefinite article a is used before words beginning with consonant sounds, including y and w sounds. The other form an is used before words beginning with a vowel sound. Hence, a European. So, for example, in what we call the sheriff's writ, it's accept an acknowledge, not accept a acknowledge, or accept and acknowledge. It's not and; it's accept an acknowledge because of the vowels. But there's so much more to it. I mean, you know, buy this book, folks, and read through it by all means. And just, as I say, get to as, at, to, for, by. These words have page after page after page of stuff about them. It's just incredible, incredible. You really want to understand this stuff further, get yourself some very good books on rules of grammar, and you'll be amazed how much of it is relevant. You'll be shocked and stunned. Brilliant. Somebody has found that, yeah, it was the page after that. Can you take... pick. Okay, so I just asked him, can they take a pick and send it to me, because it wasn't my book. I only had the loan of it. Okay, I'm going to organise that now, hopefully. Okay, I'm going to chuck on another song. And I see Billy is there listening. I wouldn't mind actually asking Billy how he feels about that situation that happened during the week. So, yeah, I'll tell you, I'm going to do that, folks. Okay, I'm going to ring Billy and see if he wants to come on. And I'm going to put on a tune. Haven't played this one in a while. Made of Orleans, OMD. It's a good long song. It's 6 minutes long. If you feel like putting on the kettle, now's a good time. You're listening live to peoplesinternetradio.com. And welcome back to peoplesinternetradio.com. Hopefully you can hear me okay. I have President of the Irish Republican Brotherhood, Billy Maguire, on the line with me, President of the Sovereign Republic of Éire, and holder and keeper of the Sovereign Seals of the Sovereign Republic of Éire, in trust for the people of the Sovereign Republic of Éire. How's that? Did I get everything, Billy?
You did, Vincent. And good evening to you, and good evening to your listeners.
Thank you very much.
All sovereign citizens.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, and we did. We were dealing with that earlier. I don't know if you heard the comments I made about that earlier, people do confuse that, Billy.
Yes.
They get confused, and I say, look, you can't be a sovereign citizen unless you're in a sovereign republic.
That's it.
Yeah.
They confuse sovereignty and royalty, and I'm always saying, you know, the importance of what people here should understand, that they became sovereign citizens on the 21st of January, 1919. And sovereignty is all about, you know, your being and your five senses and how you live your life. And royalty is about, you know, pomp and ceremony and the crown, I always say, driving around the coach and four, waving to our subjects. That isn't sovereignty, that's royalty. Sovereignty is what we are. Your being in education and hospital care and all the assets of the state, you know.
Absolutely. Well, this comment made by Catherine Byrne, I'm going to use the term pseudo-TD, who's purporting to be a TD, which of course she's not, but she made this comment, Billy, during the week, And I don't know if you came across in the newspapers or on radio. I think she actually, it was made in Castlebar, I think, with Enda Kenny and cohorts at the Fine Gael thing that was on out there. And
I thought she was Fianna Fáil, was she?
No.
It was the same person anyway. Catherine, the one that we met, was she actually read the proclamation in the Mansion House. Is that the same person?
Catherine Byrne, she was Lord Mayor of Dublin in 2000.
Oh, that's her.
2005. Now, that's
and actually, we got on very well with her. She was one of the few people that, you know, invited us in and read the, read our proclamation and that, and we were just delighted that we were there.
Now, that's interesting because, as you know, there have been many, inverted commas, naysayers out there, Billy, who were claiming that there was no trace of what happened in the Mansion House in Dublin before 2008. So you're saying definitively on the record that Catherine Byrne, Lord Mayor, 2005, she definitely she facilitated the turning of the Sovereign Seal in the Mansion House, and she read the proclamation.
Well, I think so, when we say the proclamation now, from now on we have to distinguish it. It is an Irish Republican Brotherhood's proclamation. They founded and funded the state. There was no other state funded or founded in Ireland, only by the Irish Republican Brotherhood. What was, in 1922, was a British apartheid system for the 26 and 6 counties of Ireland as an Orange Free State and a provisional government. That's what we have today.
Okay, now there's somebody saying there, it was Emer Costello that read it from Labour. But this is going back.
She did too.
And okay.
And her husband, Joe, he was the only politician that ever turned up.
Okay, so Catherine Byrne. Okay, there's somebody saying that Catherine.
But the extraordinary thing about it, as you know, our tricolour flag, that flag was you know, John, if you look at Thomas Francis Marr, when he brought that flag, the orange was nearest the pole, and the white and the green. But the Irish Republican Brotherhood adopted that flag. That's what it is, an Irish Republican Brotherhood flag. And they put that up on the GPO in 1916. It's never been captured by anybody. And
well, that was the point I was making earlier, that because it wasn't captured.
I heard you, and you were quite correct in that. The tricolour flag has never been captured, and it was taken down by Dermot Lynch and was kept in Vaughan's Hotel until it was ratified by the will of all the people on the 21st of January 1919 in Vaughan's Hotel first in the morning. That was the headquarters, GHQ, and in the cabinet room by the Supreme Council, and then by Dáil Éireann in the round room. And that's the history of it. And that's why it flies when it's flown, with the green is nearest to the pole, the white and the orange. And the orange was in deference to the Presbyterian people, who were the ones behind the War of Independence. You know, God and the sovereignty is always what they believe in. And when we say, a Christian symbol and ethos, we're referring to pre-Roman Christian. It is Celtic Christianity, you know, where every child is born sovereign, and the first four strings are earth, air, fire, and water, and that's his or her inheritance, and the five senses, your five senses, that's nine strings, and then we have the sovereign trinity. The crown has only nine, because she claims to be Dia Imondroth, that she's equal to God. And it's important to understand the tricolour flag, and that's what those volunteers went out and gave their lives for. And I think it's also very important to say that, we have something very unique in the state, and the state is the sovereign republic of Éire. There was no other state founded in Éire. And everybody seems to be claiming our tricolour flag. They treat it with contempt. They snub us. As you know, we're not invited to any of the commemorations. Everybody is trying to take it over and pretend they owned it. It's not. It was kept in trust for the sovereign citizens. That's who owned our tricolour flag. But I think you have to respect it as well. And I think people do respect it. And as you know, the GA was our organisation. And they have it, and they show it, but they never ask us for it. And as I saw on a programme recently, that Simon Coveney, they're using it on meat, that everything now that's produced in the country has a little tricolour flag on it without our permission. And, you know, you can't just go off and use that any old way at all. You must respect it. Those volunteers, they gave their lives for it. Yes, Vincent?
What I have here now is I'm just looking at a list of Lord Mayors of Dublin, and I'm going to put it into the chat box for people. They can go and check this themselves. And there's some other side questions coming in. Dan, we're a little off topic on that, Dan, at the moment, Dan Arnold, and we have covered that in the past, and I'll be happy to go through it again with you later on. But just let's get this sorted first, if you don't mind. Also, Lakeside Lenny, in relation to the questions you're asking, again, slightly off topic at the moment, but I will go into it again. And I have gone into it in extraordinary detail in the past, and it is in some of the old podcasts.
Yeah, but they're all denying, you see, that Dáil-Éireann never sat in the Mansion House. This is the latest, what people are talking about.
They don't on Oireachtas.ie website, Billy. They clearly have it down in 21st of January 1919. They have it on their website, so I mean they can't be denied.
And then the next step is they'll deny it. They don't. They, as you know, this year on the 21st of January, not one politician turned up, not one member of the judiciary turned up, not one civil servant turned up. No, they didn't recognise, acknowledge or respect the state, the sovereign Republic of Ireland,
yeah,
by all the citizens of the 32 counties.
Well, let's do this then, Billy. Remember there during, was it last week or, yeah, I think it was the middle of the week before probably, I was going through the list of Lord Mayors with you.
That's right.
Let's work our way back. So just to get clarity for people here. So Christy Burke, he was a no. Oisin Quinn?
No.
He was a no. Naoise O'Muirí?
Very, he was one of the ones... 20 only,
but he did, so he said yes.
He did.
Andrew Montague, he said yes.
He was, actually, Andrew Montague was really an exception to the rule.
He was, actually.
And he said to me, Kirby Don, he never knew that this is where the state was ratified by the will of all the people of the 32 county election of 1918.
Yep. And then before that
and
was...
And he really did a huge reception, or research into it.
Yeah.
And I remember when you know, all the people outside, he said, when he came down the stairs, he said, Billy, he said, everybody has to come in.
He was blown away by the whole thing, actually, wasn't he?
What?
He was very impressed with the whole thing. He really was.
But not on that. I think we spent 4 hours. And the fellow on the door said there were only allowed 20 in, and we were there for hours.
Yep.
And he said everybody has to come in, and everybody has to see the turning of the sovereign seat.
Okay,
and he explained it, and I was explaining. For 4 hours it went on, Vincent. Do you remember that?
I do indeed. I was there.
And he was so interesting. He said, I never knew this. I never knew it, he said.
Right, before that then was Gerry Breen, and he read the proclamation on the steps.
Yeah, but he was pushed out.
Well, he did it. He still read it on the steps. It's on the video.
He didn't intend to do it. He was intended to whip into his office.
Okay, well, he still did it.
Harry and a few other staunch.
Well, that was Harry. Harry
pushed him out the door and closed the door behind him.
I don't know if they pushed him. They guided him gracefully.
What?
They just guided him gracefully.
Well, was that what it was? He needed guidance.
Of course it was.
But he got it, I can tell you.
It was ever so graceful.
That was very funny.
Before that was Emer Costello, and she did.
Yes.
She attended and facilitated. Before Emer Costello was Evelyn Byrne.
Yes.
Did she facilitate?
Yes.
Before that was Paddy Burke.
Yeah, he was, I think Paddy Burke, was he Labour?
Labour, yes. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, before Paddy Burke was Vincent Jackson. He's an independent. That was 2006, yeah. 2007. And then before that was Catherine Byrne, Fine Gael, 2005.
Is that the Catherine Byrne now that is talking about the tricolour flag?
Yes, Fine Gael, yes. And she, yes. So, and then we go back then and we were talking about the spire in O'Connell Street when they were doing the opening ceremony for their spire in O'Connell Street, that they did that on the 21st of January. That was Mulcahy, was it?
He actually apologised for that.
Was that Royston?
And I went down and I actually met him at the spire, because it was at 12 noon, I think, the spire was to be put on.
On the 21st of January. And that's no coincidence, right?
So he had to be at that.
Right.
But he did apologise, and I went down and I met him at the spire, and I actually saw them putting the spire on the very top on that.
Mm. Okay, so which one was that? Was that Royston Brady?
No.
Or Mulcahy?
I've forgotten his name now. But
sorry, it was Mulcahy?
Whatever year it was, they put
Dermot
the spire
Lacey.
On.
Was it Dermot Lacey?
Sorry?
Dermot Lacey?
No.
Hang on, let me see. What year did the spire... Oh, sorry, we have Harry in the call there now, I think. Do we have Harry? Are you there, Harry?
Yeah,
Or is it Christina?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, it's Harry. How are you?
Hi, Harry. How are you?
Hi, Harry, Ben.
Yeah, I can't.
Unexpected call from Vincent.
I was just trying to give you a bell, but you were engaged, obviously, and I said, you might be on the radio. You know?
Yeah. I didn't know. It's a surprise. But what has to be said, you know, about that tricolor flag, that's, you know, that's very important to know that it's an Irish Republican Brotherhood flag, you know, and ratified by the will of all the citizens of the 32 counties on the 21st of January 1919. And when we read our proclamation, I hold the tricolor flag, as you see. That is that we still have possession of that flag. Nobody else has possession of that flag. If you have, you have to get permission. There's a protocol for that flag, and you have to abide by that protocol because you're desecrating it. I mean, the proclamation and the sovereign constitution, they're the foundation documents of the state, and the name of the state is the Sovereign Republic of Erin on the 21st of January 1919 by the will of all the people. And people should understand that. All this all lies and deception. And, you know, I keep on saying, Vincent, the Irish Republican Brotherhood, they abhor war, they abhor violence, they abhor corruption, you know, propaganda, lies, and deception. Sovereigns
Absolutely.
Don't live like that.
No,
and
it's
that's
not about
all
deception.
We're getting today. And you hear, I'm tired of the last couple of weeks listening over the Constitution about this new child bill and saying, oh, they never tell you what constitution. There are five constitutions in the state. What constitution are they referring to? And then you hear about, oh, when the state was founded. Yet nobody ever tells you when the state was founded. The state is the Sovereign Republic of Erin, founded by the will of all the people on the 21st of January 1919. And it was the Irish Republican Brotherhood who founded and funded the state.
Well,
and as you know, my family had to put their hands in their pocket for £1 million sterling for the 32 county election of 1918. We bought Vaughan's Hotel and donated it, you know, to the Irish Republican Brotherhood and Ogden Héireann. We're only an umbrella group that united all the people to get our independence. We're not a political party as such. And people should understand that. They have some sort of idea about that we're sort of a violent organization. The furthest from the truth, you know, we want a sovereign government. That's mandatory. And all the assets of the state are invested in the sovereign citizens. That's what you are, that you have a sovereign right to the first four strings, earth, air, fire, and water. You own the water and education, hospital care, you know, all the assets of the state. Last week on the Sean O'Rourke program, he had a program on the oil, the gas up in Mayo, and I rang the program anyway, but of course they never. But the researcher, I said, would you ask Sean to ask Shell to show their license they have?
Absolutely. Sorry, Billy, can I just interrupt you for 2 seconds because I have Ben Gilroy on the phone there. He wants to just make a quick announcement about some free tickets or something. Ben, can you hear me?
Hi, Vin. Yeah, I was just asked if I could come on your show and offer 2 free tickets on the coach that's arranged to go down to the Ballyhale protest. I believe it's going to be a good weekend. It goes down Saturday a.m. and comes back Sunday p.m. I think it's going to Killarney. There's a good collection of people. I think Ming Flanagan and others will be there. There'll be music. I think they're going to try and take in the Dublin game and stuff like that. I'm not sure what's fully involved in the free tickets, but I know definitely get you on the coach free.
This is for next
and
Saturday,
anybody else interested in going, if they contact you, maybe after the show, we can put up details of how to contact it. I don't know how you want to give away the free tickets, Vin. I'm sure
okay.
You'll come up with a novel idea.
We'll come up with some way, yeah. Okay, so
who is liable if a guard oversteps the mark or something.
So it's 2 free tickets, is it?
It's 2 free tickets on the bus down.
And what was the normal value?
I think, I'm not sure what's involved in it now. I know there's different packages on it. So the coach, I think, was €20. But I think then if you want overnight accommodation and stuff like that. You know, obviously there's extra just for B&Bs, but they're trying to get group rates so they're good and cheap for everybody.
Okay, well, I'll confirm details, whatever, with you tomorrow on that, yeah?
Yeah, brilliant.
Lovely. Thanks, Ben.
Thanks, Ben.
Everything else okay? Everything else okay?
Hello, Ben.
Hiya.
Okay, he's gone, I think. Okay, yeah, he's gone. Okay, so apparently there's a couple of free tickets going for that, folks. I'm not even sure what the heck it is, but if there's free tickets, well, sure, somebody can go down and check it out, I suppose. So, Billy, I don't know, I sent this to a few other people during the week. I don't know if you saw, I think Harry did. This was in relation to James Riley, another pseudo-TD. Tobacco giant issue legal threat over plain packaging. And as I was reading through the article, it said the following. The latest manoeuvre by JTI, whose brands also include Camel, Winston and Hamlet cigars, following heavy lobbying of the government by powerful American and Irish business interests who have argued that the draft law tramples over their intellectual and other property rights. And now hold on to your hat. In sweeping assertions to a sovereign government, JTI claims the state has no right to enact the draft law. Now I thought that was interesting. Harry, did you see that one during the week?
Sure, I kind of had response, Billy. You'll get it in the post anyway. But they also mentioned about the competency of the government to enact such legislation.
Provisional government, Harry, please. Provisional government.
Yes.
Sure. So the very important article, they said too.
Your signal is breaking up a little, Harry. Can you just try that again?
They commented on the competency.
Can I call you on the phone, Harry? Can I call you on the mobile or the landline?
Okay.
Will I get you on the mobile? Okay.
If you want to ring the landline,
yeah. Okay, I'll do that now.
Okay.
But Vincent.
Yeah.
Everybody should ask to see the license, and that's what I said about your Sean O'Rourke. To ask Shell to show the license they have. Ask that cigarette company to show the license that they have. There's not one bank, there's not one corporation in the sovereign Republic of Ireland.
Hello?
There we go. Can you hear me now, Harry?
I can hear you now, yeah.
Ah, yeah. Sorry, if you don't mind, just repeat what you said there, Harry, because we didn't hear one word of it.
Yeah, that article mentioned about the competency of this provisional government. I didn't say provisional, of course, but that's all it is, to enact such legislation. So that covers everything. It's a very important line in that article in the Times.
Yeah.
Because it's not if, it's when they realise the situation, they realise that this provisional government has no right or power to enact any legislation.
Of course not.
And what was asked before years ago for people, and it's up to the people to do it, is to write a handwritten letter to the so-called Department of Energy and, you know, the Environment, Energy and Natural Resources, requesting a copy of the contract and or license which enables, you know, foreign entities or corporations to explore, extract and to explore, extract and exploit our natural resources for foreign gain. Not enough people have actually done that.
No, it doesn't.
But people need to do that.
Yeah.
And the more people do that, the quicker we can get the issue sorted out. Not enough people do these things.
I think people need clarity on why it's important to do that so they understand the significance of it. And I think when people do understand the significance and they do have clarity on it, I think they'd be more inclined to do it. So with that in mind, I think...
They've been given all the information over the years, you know, and all they have to do is write that letter.
I agree. So what I'm going to suggest you, Harry, is at the moment we're planning to print a nice 8-page brochure, and I'm going to be asking you to give some input to it, to do some certain sections, to explain these things, to give it to people in writing so that they'll know there it is, done definitively. Because, again, I know it's been said many times here on the radio, but if it's printed and we can distribute and hand them out to people, they have it in writing in their hand. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but so all those, you know, templates have been put up on the internet, you know, for the past number of years, you know. A probable letter, it's a one-line letter, it's really simple, you know. Please forward me a copy of the contract and or license, which enables the Irish people's natural resources to be explored, extracted and exploited for foreign gain. Now, people can variate that sentence, you know, somewhat, you know.
Well,
and
I think what we'll do is we'll
lay that in to the so-called Provisional Minister for Energy and Natural Resources and ask questions and demand answers. And if enough people do that, they're going to bring the whole regime to account. Now, that's how to do it. There's no other way to do this.
Is there a template done on wethepeople.ie for people to look at for that?
Yeah, we have done that, and it should be available. It's there. Also, the We Decide How to Vacate the Likes of a Provisional Government, you know, is there. How to Vacate the government.weebly.com, I think.
Yep.
And these letters are very, very straightforward, uncomplicated, and it's easy to do. But enough people need to do this.
Well, can I just ask you for your own opinion, Harry, on, I gave my opinion on it earlier, but your own opinion, these guys going into prison and going on a hunger strike, etc., and fluid strike, I don't think that's a good idea.
Well, the Free State promoted their own people years ago to facilitate the whole con job, you know. The state doesn't give a damn about people, we know that.
No.
You know what I mean? So, I mean, you need to protect yourself. The people need to ask, as Billy has explained many a time, ask the court, well, where's your valid license? Where's your sovereign authority to do this? You know, under Dáil Éireann, the sovereign people are not to be evicted from their homes, they're not to be jailed or incarcerated unless a capital crime is being committed. You know what I mean?
Which of course, would be under the sovereign...
Dáil Éireann and the Dáil Éireann courts.
Exactly.
What we have in position in this country is a Royal Oireachtas and a British legal court system.
Exactly.
You know, and that has to change.
Absolutely.
And that's why politics won't change anything. It doesn't matter if you start a political party in the morning, it's still under the umbrella of the Royal Oireachtas, and people need to wake up to this.
Pardon me. So, look, it's there. I'm going to dig it out on your site and just stick it on ours as well, give it a link to it, and I'll share it with all members. But as I say, we'll make sure that certain sections of what you want get printed in onto this flyer that we're hoping to get done. We're hoping to get 10,000 of them done. And, you know...
What's going to be on these?
Well, I'm working on it at the moment, so that's what I'm saying. We're open to suggestions, as it were, and open to, you know, people saying, here's what I'd like on it, and, you know, let us know what you want, and we'll do it.
But what's the objective? You know, the thing
objective
is there has to be an objective.
Absolutely.
You know?
The objective is to share the solutions we have found, to demonstrate to people that, you know, for example, I don't know if you heard that Breiser had the official offer process in court, and it worked out well for him. And again, all credit to you, Harry, in that regard, because without Harry, we wouldn't have known anything about that, folks, even though everybody kind of instinctively knows it was there, but until Harry definitively spelled it out to us and gave us the very simple process, which we had to call it something to spread the idea on the internet, so we came up with the idea of calling it the official offer, and it has spread like wildfire, Harry. That's spread like wildfire.
Sure,
and it is effective. And
it's a simple method.
Well, I'm going to tell you, Harry, because I don't know if you know. I'm going to tell you because I don't know if you know.
With this simple process, right?
Yeah.
You vacate the British Accredited Registry Legal Bar Court System. You vacate the sheriff. You vacate the banks, the unlawful banks. You vacate so many constructs all in one go. And the people stay in their homes. Evictions are halted. People stay in their homes, and people cease taking their own lives.
Well, on top of that, Harry, I think you need to know this, because I've had, over the years, I've had a lot of people contact me and said to me that, you know, that the difference having people's internet radio or MSI or the other variants we had in the past, that the difference it's made to people, that the official offer process in particular, I've had people tell me it's because they put that in place, they have literally the ideas that they were going to go and commit suicide left their mind.
Oh, yeah.
There are people alive today because that, and again, I keep passing all credit to you for that because that's where it's due. And that's, and even same thing, Billy.
It wouldn't get out over the radio. You know, I mean, the radio pushed it out there big time. I mean, what you've done as well, you know, pushing this and pushing all the other things out there, it wouldn't get out there. You know what I mean? It would have been.
Thank you. Tis me.
I mean, it's gone all over the place.
It is.
This is and applicable, and not just in Ireland, it's applicable in England and America and, you know, Canada. Should even Canada declare itself a republic on the 15th of January?
Absolutely.
I mean, this stuff has gone all over the place.
And what do you think? I mean, do you agree with what I said earlier, that of course they're going to call people like that domestic terrorists because it terrifies them, because they have control, and it terrifies them losing control.
Losing control because people are waking up. I mean, just a couple of days ago, meeting people who were trying to prevent installations of meters, they came up to me and he said, you mean the Royal Oireachtas? And I said, oh, where did you hear that? You know, he said, oh, he saw a sticker somewhere and he went onto the website and we found all the information.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just one situation.
Yeah.
The last couple of days. You can imagine, you know, the people who are awakened to what's really going on, you know.
Well, look, I've said it to Billy. I've said
and
it to Billy.
Ireland will lead the way, and Ireland has.
We couldn't put this back in the box, Harry, if we tried.
Not a hope.
I mean, that's the beauty of this, that, you know, if everybody stopped doing, you know, the people know this information, it's out there, it's not going back in the box. It's once something goes onto the internet, it never gets removed. It just can't, you can't remove it.
But Vincent.
Yes, Billy.
One thing, you were talking there about those that have been put in jail.
Yeah.
And I think that is an absolute scandal. But as, you know, Mick Reardon had a very important win down in Cork. Because he did things correctly.
Yes.
He wrote to the court clerk and he said he wanted his case heard under the sovereign constitution. And when he arrived in court, the judge had no alternative. He was told he's won his case.
Yes.
But he did it. But if you don't do things properly, if you go into a court like those people did, the judge will throw the book at you because he'll hold you in contempt of court.
Well, effectively, you're going in, and the presumption is you're a subject.
Yes.
That's the presumption, whether you like it or not, folks. That's the way they view things.
And you're giving him, you're agreeing, when you go into court, or you have a contract with him, that you have to do what he says. And he says you're in contempt of court, and you have no choice. Whereas, you're a sovereign citizen. And I mean, if they don't stand up, and I was very disappointed that they didn't go, when they were brought to court, that they didn't question, first of all, excuse me, Vincent, that to see the judge's license, he doesn't have a license to hold a court. And when he went into court, all our sovereign seals are up there. Those courts are the sovereign Republican Dáil-Éireann courts on the 21st of January.
And you
see, they are for the sovereign citizens.
And if those courts didn't wish to have access to that, Billy, why would they have that up there? You see, this is what people need to understand. I've been saying for a long time.
They're only pretending, Vincent, there was Andy Kenny shouting about, you know, a sovereign government and talking about, and yet he refused, and I say he refused, as did Michael D. Higgins, to attend the 21st of January when the state was founded this year.
Well,
and not one politician or member of the judiciary or one civil servant turned up at that ceremony.
Well,
and as you know, we were outside Leinster House. They had our tricolour flag. They have all our symbols of state. And not one of them. So what state are they beholden to then if they won't recognise the state, the sovereign republic of Éire? And we've mentioned many times about De Valera's 37 constitution, which you mentioned there, and Article 4. De Valera left out republic. Yeah, and in Article 5, he left out Republic because the British wouldn't allow him to put it in.
Yep.
The name of the state is the Sovereign Republic of Éire. And De Valera left out Republic out of that.
And let's face it,
Billy. How can the judiciary
say, he knew damn well.
How can they say that's legal, valid, or bona fides?
Yeah, and he knew damn well. I mean, that's the point I'd like to make.
Of course he knew as well. He was colluding with the British when he did it.
Yes.
And he was betraying the Irish people. That's what he did. And they can say what they like, but that's it's there in black and white for anyone to read. So what? When you go into court, will you ask the judge, or ask before you even go into court, ask the court clerk, if you do your business right,
what constitution is your case going to be heard under? And if they say, oh, it's the sovereign constitution, well, that's fine, because you're a sovereign citizen, and that's the 32 county. But if they say it's the free state constitution, it isn't fine. If they say it's De Valera's 37 constitution, it's not legal, valid, or bona fides, no. And it was only a 26 county imposed by King George V and written in the Shelburne Hotel. Yeah.
Well, the difference was, Billy, 1922 constitution was an imposition. That was imposed, but the 1937...
It was written in the Shelburne Hotel. It was imposed by King George V.
Right, but
that's what people don't understand.
No, but
whereas the sovereign constitution was by the will of all the people.
Right, but something I don't know if a lot of people realize about the 37 constitution, that the 37 constitution was made an optional extra, if you will, that you could contract to it if you wished. It's optional. You can opt in and you can also opt out. That's something I think people need to realize. And the reason you can opt out, of course, is because there's another constitution behind that, which is, of course, is the 1919 constitution.
Yeah.
And people have, there have been other people, and I know we're not going to get into details about this right now, but there has been somebody recently who used the 1919 sovereign constitution as well in a court case with a successful outcome. Isn't that correct? But we won't get into details.
Yes. And the judges and the judiciary, they have to recognize that, because they do recognize that people are sovereign in the state.
Yes.
And that's the point. And it's their constitution. And but people have to, look, they're going to have to stand up and they're going to have to understand what they're doing. If they don't, you're going to be enslaved by all these corporations and that, who just come in here to rip off everything they can. There's one of them has a license.
Nope.
And as I said, I asked Sean O'Rourke to ask Shell to show their license. And as you know, I asked last year the Lord Mayor to show his license. He couldn't show his license. The GA couldn't show the license. And the reason for that, the Garth Brooks concert, they didn't have a license for it. And America are now checking up on all this. And the question should be asked, all right, when the Garth Brooks concert was cancelled, the money of that that was going to be made, the GA were getting their share, but where was the rest of the money going to? Was it going back to the United States of America, or was it being hidden in Europe? And it was the American government that they were the ones who wouldn't allow it. I mean, people don't realize that.
Well, I don't know if you're aware of this one. During the week, this one came out, that America and the Chinese apparently have lifted their ban on Irish beef. Have you heard that one?
I have.
Okay.
And how can Simon Coveney, he doesn't have a license to export Irish beef, and yet he's doing it to America, and they're using our tricolour flag, you know, on a little corner of the meat. And he doesn't recognize the state. He didn't turn up on the 21st of January. And his father was the one that got at Vaughan's Hotel, when he was the provincial minister for the OPW.
And not only that, Billy, but there was also, I don't know if you know this, and I'd like Harry's input on this one as well, Simon Coveney also, it seems, did some type of a formal arrangement with the Crown Forces during the week, whereby the Defence Forces here are going to be doing training and whatnot with the British Armed Forces.
But how can Simon Coveney do that? He's only a provincial minister. He's put a gold braiding round our tricolour flag. He's supposed to be the provincial minister for the Defence Forces. And he's desecrating the proclamation and the sovereign constitution. He doesn't uphold the constitution. And he doesn't recognize the state. If he was, he'd have been at the Mansion House on the 21st of January, and he would have recognized the state, the sovereign Republic of Ireland. He doesn't recognize it. Yet he goes off to America and pretends that he has something. Dáil Éireann has never sat in Leinster House. And while I am talking, Vincent, if you would give me a moment on the Irish Republican Brothers coming up to St. Patrick's Day. And as you know, we go down to 16 Lumber Street. And they were founded down at 16 Lumber Street in Langdon's, what was a timber yard in those days, in 1858, on the 17th of March. And I would like everybody to on the 17th of March, as you know, not one paper, RT refused to even wish the Irish Republican Brotherhood a happy birthday on that day. And I think, you know, that's very rude and very bad manners. America are now taking it up because it's a huge day, and it's a huge day across the world where Irish people, 70 million people, you know, have been literally, you know, thrown out of the state, and it's a great day for them. But they should remember that the tricolour flag, the shamrock, the Easter lily, you know, all the symbols of the state, they're all owned by the Irish Republican Brotherhood, who keep them in trust for the sovereign citizens. And people should be told about that, and they should celebrate it. But people should also wish the Irish Republican Brotherhood a happy birthday on that day. RTE refuses even to comment on it. And at least this year, we're hoping that the Grand Marshal, I can't think of his name now, he's that, you know, yes, Mrs. Brown. I
know. Brendan O'Carroll this year.
Brendan O'Carroll. Well, he's people were members of the Irish Republican Brotherhood. And we're hoping that he might go down in the parade at some stage. I always wanted the Tourist Office and Dublin Corporation to start the parade down in 16 Lumber Street and make a sense. And the Shelburne Hotel told me that they have a big week every St. Patrick's week, and they bring all these people from America, and it's very expensive, I believe, a couple of thousand, I think, per person. And that's a huge week for them. But I said to them, and you never go down to 16 Lumber Street, and you never show them, and you never tell them the reason why we celebrate it is that the Irish Republican Brotherhood, all the symbols of the state, they're all the Irish Republican Brotherhood, and they funded and founded the state. And they were founded on the 17th of March, 1858. And the Fenian Brotherhood, who collected all that money in America, and, you know, with Friends of Irish Freedom, you know, all those factories and everything they bring here, you know, it's time we copped ourselves on. And I think, you know, we have something very unique and very special. And our people, you know, are sovereign citizens. But the way they're treated by the provisional government and by the, you know, the arms of the state, you know, the Garda Síochána and that, they don't care. It seems to be all about money today. Money seems to justify any action that they do. Anyway, that's my little plug for putting in about the 17th of March, and hoping that
you
know, the papers and the radios will take on that and wish the Irish Republican Brotherhood a happy. And I think it is,
I'm delighted you've said that.
67 years.
Yeah, I'm delighted you've said that, because, again, I had intended on including that information in this flyer that we're putting out there. We're going to put some very clear information into this in relation to what is sovereignty, what is a sovereign state, where does it come from, where did it start, how did it come about, who was involved, who is it holding it in trust, its symbols, its structure, and the reasons as to why it is lawful and de jure. Because I think that needs to be collected together.
Absolutely correct. And what most people don't realize, that on the 21st of January 1919, all the institutions of the state, of the Sovereign Republic of Erin, were up and working. And as I said, we had given a huge donation to that. But Friends of Irish Freedom had collected all the money for those institutions. Remember, they were already up there. Michael Collins was Minister for Finance. In 1922, in the provisional government, he was only provisional minister for finance. And they were collected all the money for those institutions, for industry, for the hospitals, all the institutions of the state. And sure, the Irish Republican Brotherhood never got a penny, because all robbed to set up Fianna Fáil and to set up the Irish Press. And Cumann na Gael, they got it to set up Fine Gael. And the American government gave all that money that was owned and was for the Irish Republican Brotherhood, collected by James McGuire, Friends of Irish Freedom in America. They gave it to the British apartheid system that King George V imposed.
But the reason they gave
The 26 and 6 counties of Ireland as an Orange Free State,
I've been
that's
researching.
What America did.
I've been researching that, as you know. I've been looking into that. And, of course, they gave it because they, too, are under the crown. It
that's
was a
exactly
crown-controlled government in America.
And you think that all these great people,
exactly,
the Kennedys and all that, my father brought the Kennedys here, and the Kennedys were totally pro-British all the time,
yes,
as are America all the time when they come, even the Good Friday Agreement. Isn't it a total British? They take the side completely of Britain every time. And I think it's time it stopped. And I think the sovereign republic of ERA should be recognized by America and by the other countries.
We have
a sovereign government. So that's what de Gaulle was on about, that we could sit at the European table only by a sovereign government.
Well, I think once the people here realize this, Billy, that's what's really going to do it. That once the people realize it, you see, then every so-called politician is going to have to start answering questions when they start knocking on doors. So this time, for example, their new general election, or their, what's the next election that's coming up for them? It's coming up relatively quick. They're not going to be able to deal with half the questions that happen on their doorsteps and they go around knocking on doors. They're not going to be able to have answers for people because so many people are going to be asking them. They knock on the door. Oh, hi, I'm such and such from such and such a political party. Show me your license under the Sovereign Republic of Ireland. And they're going
to
have to just keep.
They're going to have to just keep walking away. And going out borrowing all that money. That money is the Crown of England and the British taxpayer and the British government are responsible for that. We are not responsible for that. And it's time that Europe stood up and took our side and told the truth. You know what happened. And I think it's time America, you know, they're talking about all their money for their empire. The American empire has been hidden away in taxes in all these countries, which it is, I believe.
Hmm.
But they have to have a license here. And America should insist that when a country... they should show the license. We're only asking them to show the license you have. If you're pretending, and you look at Article 21, all money matters must come initiated in Dáil Éireann. Dáil Éireann has never sat in Leinster House. So how could money matters initiate in Dáil Éireann?
Well, again,
they're talking about the 21st
the
of January 1919, the first and second Dáil. Yes.
And that was down to the propagandist Edward Bernays. I don't know if you heard the quote I said earlier on, that Edward Bernays, the world-famous propagandist, he said, first they steal the words, and then they steal the meaning for the words. And that's exactly what they did.
Well, I can tell you now, Dáil Éireann has never sat in Leinster House. Dáil Éireann sat in the Mansion House, in the Round Room. And this thing, they swap, and they change, and they... You hear them then when they're under pressure. And I saw Sean Barrett, he was telling about he got a letter addressed to Dáil Éireann. Well, he shouldn't have opened it then. He told Miriam O'Callaghan that time the letter there. Why did he open a letter addressed to him as the Cian Corra of Dáil Éireann when Dáil Éireann has never sat in Leinster House? You know, when he was under pressure, it changed from being the Royal Dáil to Dáil Éireann. But you know, this is what they do, and they just confuse people, and when they're under pressure, because it's all about money and their salaries and their huge, you know, they're getting these huge salaries and pensions and expenses, and that's, they couldn't care less as long as they're getting those.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, that little pocketbook I was reading earlier on.
To the fact, you know?
Yes, but it's the people are sovereign, and your children and your grandchildren, you're the ones that are being enslaved.
Yeah, but the so-called education system are giving them mis- and false information. I mean, all this has been aired of history, you know.
Well, I don't know if you're aware of this one, Harry.
Getting out there. There's no doubt about that.
Harry, are you aware that the Garda Síochána have been going into classrooms around Ireland and telling the children that not to protest, you'll get arrested?
Well, that's wrong. Well, there's other people, you know, counteracting that, you know.
Yeah.
There's 100,000 of these flyers going out, A4, A5, you need to know this.
Yeah.
And it explains everything. And, you know, there's more people aware of this than ever, and they're printing them all over the country. That's the beauty of this. This isn't going back. This is the demise of the Oireachtas as we speak.
Yeah.
Because it explains everything here. The Oireachtas is not Dáil Éireann. Dáil Éireann never sat in Leinster House.
No,
never.
I don't know if you're
and
aware
it
of this.
Just to explain, the Oireachtas is a construct imposed under the crown by King George V, December 22, under the threat of immediate and terrible war upon the Irish people.
Well, I just come in and finish the point that Dáil Éireann, Dáil in Irish, that word Dáil, it actually translates as, in the ancient Irish, the correct translation is assembly of the people of Éireann. That's what Dáil Éireann was, and it was a peaceful assembly. And they've turned, they stole that word and they turned it into something else. They tried to convince people it's something other than. And then, of course, they say, oh, they're sort of, kind of, maybe, kind of representing you. Maybe. And, of course, they're not our representatives. They are clearly operating under the crown. They always have been. And there's no,
the interesting thing this week, as far as going, if it wasn't this week, because I think it was this week, for the second time, the Russian planes flew down the west coast of Ireland.
Right? That's right, with a nuclear device.
And to prove the point that this country is still under the crown, because the Russians and the international community are more aware of this than the people in Ireland are. Because the Russians were, they only did this just to prove a point, I'm sure, because they know very well the state of this country and who controls it, because they were escorted away from our west coast by 4AF planes.
And they also used the term sovereign airspace, Harry. Did you notice that?
Yeah. Oh, yes. No. So the Russians are very well aware of what's going
Absolutely.
On.
Absolutely. The day of the, on 21st of January, I don't know if you know this, but on the 21st, just gone, I was talking to someone who reports for RT, right, Russia Today, and I said to her, how come you're here? And she said, well, the reason I'm here, she said, I've just come over, and she was researching Ireland and Irish history in Russia. And she told me, she said, the reason she was here is, she said, because she knew, she had seen the documents where Russia had recognized the Sovereign Republic of Era, and that's what, well, that's how come she was there on the 21st of January.
Yeah.
And it's like India. India still recognises it because India's independence came out of the Vaughan's Hotel papers and the Liverpool salt tax that Britain imposed on India. And their flag is our tricolour flag turned the other way. Yeah. And our sovereign constitution is their sovereign constitution. And I mean, I find the whole thing, we have the most wonderful history. And yet, you're talking about schools. Is there any proclamation up in the school? Is there any sovereign constitution up in the school? Children are just, they don't know the difference between the sovereign seal and the harp.
Well,
and
mine,
the harp is the covenant
do,
between God and man, with all the information and knowledge for his planet Earth and our civilization, whereas the sovereign seal is Anno Domini 2015, and it is the Book of Psalms is the Psalter, and that's the Psalter, the instrument that accompanies the Psalms. And it is the most wonderful history. And when we refer to a Christian symbol and ethos, we're talking, as I said, before Roman Catholicism, we're talking about when every child, Celtic Christianity, when every child is born sovereign and has a sovereign right to the four elements, earth, air, fire, and water, and man's intellect and reason, and his five senses. And once you understand that, you can make sense of the world.
And they have now they've taken the first three earth, fire, and water. They control the earth, how much land you can have or live on. They've controlled the fire, how much heating you can have if you're an OAP. And now they control the water. And what's next? Air. I've said it to people, if they could literally figure out some way of putting a mask on your face and could charge you for inhaling and exhaling, they will do so.
They're on that one already, yeah. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's up to the people, you know. Instead of people doing nothing, you need to put pen to paper. The pen is mightier than the sword. You put S in front of word and it becomes a sword. And you need to get it, rather than do nothing, and I don't know what they do all the time, but they need to put pen to paper and write a handwritten letter into, for example, the natural resources and ask for a copy of the license or contract and demand it. And if enough people do this,
well,
I was thinking
about
over that, for them.
They
because
also,
statistically, we know that one registered letter constitutes 13,000 people. If we get 50 registered letters from each county in the country, it's game over. It's done. And Ireland will have been the only country in the world to have vacated a de facto provisional government lawfully by the wish and will of the people. That's the best referendum anybody can achieve. It blows out of the water all their, pencil-marked referendas where they can eliminate and erase the pencil mark for a yes vote. You know, when you write a handwritten letter, it comes directly from the people. There's no more definitive proof
Well, I was even thinking about that, Harry.
That they take this Royal Oireachtas.
I even think that in that letter, I think people should also add another line in there saying, failure to produce a licence, I accept you are abandoning your claim to be able to do so legitimately. Let's kick a little legal ass
as
well.
I usually do one line, just one.
Oh, yeah, but make it one line. Comment.
Let me go into default on the issue and then go in for the kill.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And register it and put it on the record. And that's
the other thing I was going to say to you is that the Russian recognition, and I had this conversation with Billy during the week, that do you think the Russians are about to kind of poke and say maybe, well, hey, we recognize the sovereign republic of ERA, and if we're flying in their airspace, we've recognized them, and if Billy, for example, to say, well, they're more than welcome to fly in
our
airspace.
Well, I would say they're more than welcome, because, look, our great friends, America, have always betrayed us, and we have Germany now coming on our side, that especially over the sovereignty and the sovereignty of Germany, and they see that on the 21st of January 19, we became the sovereign republic of ERA by the will of all the people, and that's very important. And we see and what about China? I mean, we're getting our meat into America, but we're also getting it into China. And as you know, when Michael D. Higgins went off to China, they wouldn't allow him to put the admiralty gold braiding around our tricolour flag. They had to have the sovereign republic of ERA and our sovereign tricolour flag. That's what they insisted on.
When he
went to South Africa, did he mention that what King George V imposed in 1922 was a British apartheid system for the 26 and 6 counties of Ireland as an Orange Free State and a provisional government that we still have? And I remember when Mandela came here, they were talking about Mandela today someplace or other, and when he went to the Mansion House, he wanted to know all about the Sovereign Republic of Ireland on the 21st of January and the setting up and Dorrian in the round room and that. And I think it was Sean Haughey was the Lord Mayor at the time. And they refused to tell him. And he was a guest of the state, the Sovereign Republic of Ireland. And they wouldn't tell him because, as you know, there's links there with South Africa and that,
Can I also say, Billy, maybe, I don't know, you've said this before on air, about the time you got that visit, remember you got a visit from a Chinese...
Those Chinese people.
Yeah, maybe just tell everybody about that.
Well, that was extraordinary. You see, as you know, my house is an open house here. I don't... people are always calling in and asking something or other. And I get a lot of people from the European Union come here and ask about Ireland's sovereignty because they know that we only got in to the European Parliament and European Union, which was the EEC at the time, because Britain wanted to go in, and as you know, de Gaulle wouldn't allow us in because we only had a provisional government. And they keep on coming here, they go to the Department of Foreign Affairs and they ask them about the sovereignty and the sovereign seals and the tricolour and everything else. And that's our tricolour flag that's flying over in the European Parliament. Without without our protocol.
It begs the question, Billy, who do you think told them to go down and call to you?
I often wondered that. I suppose the records are there. Vaughan Sertel, I know it's been airbrushed out in that, but the records are there.
The Chinese government, they would have kept their own very, very detailed and intricate records about what was happening historically in Ireland at the time.
Well, I know somebody who... And I asked them about who's a lot of property in that, in China. And I asked them about it and about it.
Well, they're very meticulous people.
I went to a dinner party and they were there from, these would be top class bankers and that, and very, the top people in London and that, and all about the sovereignty. And they wanted to know. They went to the Department of Foreign Affairs, the delegation. They just arrived here. They didn't tell me they were coming or anything like that. And they came in, because a lot of people come in and out here. And you know, up in my kitchen, because you've been here, Vincent.
I have.
You see the tricolour flag, and you see all the sovereign seals and that are up there for anybody to see it. And they came in, and they were asking about the sovereignty and the difference between that, because the harp is the covenant between God and man, with all the information, knowledge for his planet Earth. and our civilization. You can't, I mean, we're talking about the world, how to maps and all that intelligence and all science, all mathematics, you know, everything you have, time, you know, which you showed about the projection of a film up onto that Ronacrant of the two harps, and that's your first, your television program, your first cinema, your watch, everything is on that, the sundial, the compass, the wheel, and how you build your ship, and how you build your civilization. Well, that's what they were interested in.
I don't know if I told you this, Billy. Sorry for interrupting you. Very sorry. Something very interesting that I found, I did a little test, okay, and I'd like everybody to do this all over Ireland, anywhere there's some ancient standing stones or a stone circle. I did this, and I was quite surprised. I happened to have a string with me, Billy. Ever since you told me about things, I always carry a piece of string in my pocket. And this day
that's
in particular,
important, Vincent.
Well, this day in particular, not only did I have the string, I happened to have a very powerful neodymium magnet in my pocket that I'd extracted from an old hard drive. And this is an extraordinarily powerful magnet. And I went to some ancient standing stones. And I was just doing some stuff with the magnet hanging on the end of the string when suddenly the magnet stuck to the stone.
Yes.
And what I'm saying here is, folks, I'd like everybody to go any ancient standing stone or stone circle in Ireland and have a little test with these neodymium magnets on a string, and please report back to me and let me know what you find. Because
and
I think there's, another
the
layer.
Two fingers, the way I show you the salt and seal
yes.
sign, you know, when I the thumb and the third finger mm-hmm. as a circle that represents the sun, the moon, and the other two, that's the V, that's Tutankhamun's sovereign seal,
yep.
and you know the harp and how you make your maps.
Well, here's what I found, Billy. That in these stone circles, it sticks literally.
Yeah. They're not just stones. You go in and you see.
But here's the thing: it sticks to
the
some stones.
The harp signs on these stones.
Right.
It's written on it.
But it
and
sticks
that,
to some. And
that Ronacrant stone in Lochcroy, the largest stone.
Yeah.
You can see the Om, the first structured language of mankind, is on it. And the second is hieroglyphics. I mean, that's older than, the ancient, the Celtic people brought that.
Right, but
that
it that's sticks to some stones, but not to others, Billy. And because it sticks to some and not others, and I did a rotation, I said, okay, well, I started at the point where you told me how to start and how to enter the stone circle, and I entered the way you explained, and I said, okay, and I went around the different stones, and I put the magnet, again, some it stuck to, and I took note, and some it didn't, and I took note. And of course, you explained to me about the different types of stones, etc. And I said, okay, well, if I keep rotating this in a circle and I take numbers, I record for, okay, here's point one, and I use the numbers accordingly. And I'm not sure if I've found what I think I found, but it seems to be that there's some type of an ancient code embedded into stones via the magnetized and not magnetized.
There is a course, Vincent. Isn't that what it's all about?
Well,
and the pendulum,
I mean,
the pendulum, the on the end of the string, and how that works, and how the pyramids of Egypt were built on that alignment alone. You know,
well, this won't work, of course, anywhere they've interrupted or interfered with the stones, which is why I was wondering. I don't know if you've ever heard of magnets sticking to these stones, or Harry.
Yes, I have, Vincent, and it's all part of that magnetic field, and all everything on that hop, everything on it has a meaning to all the planet Earth and all our being. It's your being and the welfare of your being, and those strings, you cross the strings, how man learned to weave his cloth, latitude and longitude, how man learned to make those maps, those circular maps. It's all on the hop, how you made the wheel, all the mathematics, all the alignments, and you know how to do those, Vincent, or just a string and a stick,
yep.
The sundial, the compass, the wheel. Everything that you can understand about planet Earth is on that harp. And the harp, it's the source of the Bible and the Quran. It comes from the harp. Those tablets that were written, if you put the strings of the harp up to those tablets, you can read them.
Mm-hmm.
And what are they fighting about?
They're not really fighting. They're being pitched against each other.
Don't understand that they're deliberately misleading.
Well, I'm going to tell you what I think, Billy. They're all being pitched against each other via the crown, and they just don't realize it. and they're being manipulated, and they just don't realise it. And I think as people start to realise this across the planet, that the British Empire has gone nowhere. And they just changed the name. As I say, they do it through the language. They changed the name. They convince the people, you're kind of sort of independent, kind of sort of. And yeah, yeah, have your Independence Day like they do in India, but we still have you under control. Let's not forget the Balfour Declaration set up Israel-Palestine division. The Pakistan-India division. The Northern Ireland, the six counties division, the Balfour did all of these things for the Crown.
Divide and rule is called, Vincent. Divide and rule.
Yes.
And that's what they do.
So what we're, seeing on the main evening news at 9 o'clock via, I mean, who can dispute RTE? I don't know if you saw Tuberty there the other night with, I mean, even though he's a socialist, Paul Murphy. Did you see that interview? I don't know if you saw it, Harry.
I didn't see it, no.
No, I don't have a telly now.
Right. But, you know, Tuberty, who's pertaining to be, well, I mean, when the royal visit was happening, I mean, he was only short of being her doormat, you know. But let's just say he phrased his questions in a very specific manner. He was using very exacting techniques. If you look at that again, folks, and I'm talking to the listeners here, if you look at that again, you'll spot the techniques he's using. If you go and look at these techniques, you'll see that there's a very specific source for where these techniques came from. And it's part of the Crown's modus operandi, if you will. They've been doing it for centuries across the entire planet.
That's very true. Still doing it. Edward Bernays, he engineered...
Bernays. Look what he did with cigarette smoking. He got women smoking cigarettes,
he's
basically.
The pioneer of propaganda. And, of course, the propaganda pioneer over here for the political parties was P.J. Mara.
P.J.
Mara. That's what he did over here. He used Bernays techniques.
Absolutely. He used them basically verbatim.
Sure, yeah. And they're still doing it, you know. Yeah. Still honest.
And, you see, the thing is, Harry, I need for people to realise and to accept. You see, I think a lot of people say, oh, that wouldn't work on me, Vin. It does work on you, folks. It used to work on me, but it's only when you educate yourself. That's what I always got from Billy, that when we educate ourselves, when we recognize and understand these things, that's when they never work on you again. They can never manipulate you when you're
because
educated.
They can't, Vincent.
No.
If you're a sovereign and you do what you're telling people, you can't be controlled.
Exactly.
Not possible.
Now, I'm just going to read this. There was one other thing I wanted to read from this large tome that was purporting to be on the Constitution of the 1937 version, if you will, of what they say is the Constitution, because this one was in relation to anarchy. And the Irish people, we have lived with anarchy for thousands of years. I mean anarchy. I don't mean chaos. I mean anarchy, where we didn't have a ruler. We had rules, but we didn't have a ruler. We had a rule of law. We had the ancient Brehon law system, but that was separate to the chieftains and the high kings and all. That was separate. Any man or woman on the land could literally sue the king if he did him a wrong with Brehon law. And if he was correct, he would win. It happened. Chapter 13, Legality and the Rule of Law, they have written in here, a society founded on anarchy is the very opposite of one that adheres to the principle of legality and the rule of law. Where anarchy prevails, there are no set norms of conduct. Persons are free to do what they like to themselves or to others, provided, of course, that they can get away with it. Anarchy has no room for rules or courts or for governing principles such as equality, due process and substantive individual rights. And I just want to come on record saying that's an absolute lie. Ireland operated in the exact manner prescribed for thousands of years with Brehon law, no problem. In fact, loved Brehon law. They loved it because it was their law.
It's part of your structure. That's what it is. And how can, if you go outside that, you're lost? Isn't that what happens to people?
Well, I'll continue. It is well known, in his well-known book on the British Constitution of the Victorian era, A.V. Dicey described the rule of law as a fundamental constitutional principle comprising the following features, and he describes what it is, but they're always saying, oh, anarchy is no good. What they actually mean is, they don't mean anarchy. This is Edward Bernays stealing the meaning of the word here. What they meant was chaos. They're talking about chaos, not anarchy. They're trying to equate the word anarchy, and they're trying to redefine what the word anarchy means. It simply means no monarchy. There's no overarching ruler, as in it's not an individual. That's what anarchy means. Monarchy means there's one overarching ruler, a man or a woman who's claiming to be head honcho. Who can...
These re-engineered words.
Yes, yes.
They don't...
Yeah, his spelling for Bernays, by the way.
Re-engineered society and the people in it, you know, into their regime.
I'm just typing into the chat box. The correct spelling for Bernays is B-E-R-N-A-Y-S, folks, not the A-I-S-E one. It's B-E-R-N-A-Y-S, if you're Edward Bernays, if you're looking him up. Just a lot of people think it's that other spelling. It's not. But he, again, his methodology is still being used to great effect by all those in the Royal Oireachtas and every other purported pseudo-parliament around the planet, and they are still using those techniques. And as we educate ourselves and our children, educate your children, folks. As Billy was talking about, saying, oh, children don't know this, that, that. Mine do. Harry's does. I know the people who are listening here. Our children know. We are telling our children, Billy. And that's the true strength of the people.
An
educated child. That's what scares...
My daughter says today, I said, look, Eve, what's that say? I said, Dad, it doesn't say anything. It's just a piece of paper. It doesn't say anything.
That's it. That's why we call it stationary, right? Exactly. It's stationary. It doesn't say anything.
Great hope there, yes.
Oh, I'll tell you one thing, there is.
But that's the true power. Once our children get this, folks, that's what scares them more than anything. Not us, we don't scare them, but our children terrorize them. It's our children that terrorize them, not
because
us.
They ask the truth and they ask the question, and that's what they do.
A child that thinks straight, Billy, is infallible almost. You ask, you want to know if something is right or wrong, ask a four-year-old child. He won't even blink an eye. He'll tell you immediately whether it's right or wrong.
Exactly.
Before he goes to school.
And you don't drink tap water to medicate them, yeah.
Exactly.
Well, that's important, That's great to hear it, There is hope. There's no doubt about it.
There is, and the hope is always the children.
There's so many people out there now aware of the whole thing. They never before, Good.
It is brilliant. And again, so look, I mean, I've put it out there. I mean, I've been saying to people, look, if you have something, I'll start a forum post on the site that if you think there's something that you really, really think needs to be in the flyer, if you're a listener, if you just want to put something in, let us know and maybe give us some justification and we'll consider it, of course. We only have so much space on it. We're going to try and literally jam as much as we possibly can in. We're going to try and put as much as we can in from PIR, as much as we can in from We the People and Harry, as much as we can from Billy Maguire, as much as we can about all the different solutions. We're going to change the tagline on the top of the website. We're going to move away from seeking solutions, and we're going to change that to People's Internet Radio offering solutions, because I think we've been seeking solutions for long enough, and we have solutions, and I think it's time we started to let everyone know we're actually offering them to you.
Yeah, well they've been proved, you see.
And they have been proved. Again. You've proved them, Harry.
So they could be probably labelled as such. You know?
I mean,
they've tried and tested,
They have. Can we just go through some of that, Harry? Because some of the solutions that, let's take the last a couple of moments to just go through some of the solutions that we know work. We've seen them work. They've been operated upon and they've been successful. And everybody, I mean, I've shown it with when armed members of an Garda Síochána came to my home, my dwelling. Harry was even here. Harry, you were here one day and sitting on the couch, right? They left. They left me in peace because I didn't go and engage. I didn't interfere. Whatever they thought they were doing out there, I left them to it. Yeah. We didn't interfere. They went away. I put a video online and I called it Gardaí Uphold the Constitution because they upheld it. I didn't have to. Whatever constitution they swore an oath to, well, apparently they upheld it. And that was fine.
But I mean, the oath of office,
Exactly.
180, If they swore an oath to protect donkeys, for example, and they violate that oath, you hold them to the oath of whatever it is, it doesn't give a damn what the oath is. If they swore up to uphold
exactly
a certain thing, well, you hold them to that oath of office, and that's it.
Now, here's an interesting one for you, Hardy. This came up a while ago. Somebody said to me, somebody had written in and asked a question. Again, the pen and paper, folks. It's dynamite. Somebody wrote in and asked a question, Harry. I don't know if you'd heard this one, or Billy. Why do all the Garda Síochána Cána make the oath of office collectively when members of the Defence Forces have to do so individually? And apparently after they wrote this letter, that they started to do it individually again. Isn't that an interesting one?
Well, it is very interesting.
That is.
And Vincent, you know that the Garda Síochána Cána, their first day on duty was the 21st of January 1919 in the Mansion House.
That's right.
Which the Garda Síochána don't even know themselves. They came from the Irish Volunteers, is where they came down from that.
Yeah, they tried to tell them it was 1923, but it wasn't.
It wasn't. It was the 21st of January 1919, and it was the Irish Republican Brotherhood set up the Garda Síochána. And, of course, they've changed all that now. And they were supposed to uphold the sovereign constitution. That's what they were set up for. It's like the Defence Forces. What are the Defence Forces? What do they uphold? Is it the Sovereign Republic of Erin? Or is it the 26-county Free State imposed by King George V as a British apartheid system for the 26 and 6 counties of Ireland as a provisional government? And is that why they're putting the British Admiralty gold braiding round our tricolour flag? You know, these are questions that need to be answered. And I mean, it's Dáil Éireann is the sovereignty. The Royal Dáil and Oireachtas isn't. And I wonder, you know, you asked questions there about Simon Coveney are they under the crown still? Who is their allegiance to? Is it to the sovereign citizens?
I forgot to mention something. Guess what location Simon Coveney chose to make this apparent arrangement with the British military unit. Commander, representative. I'll give you a clue. Dublin Castle.
Oh, what's there, Dublin Castle.
Constables.
You couldn't make it up if you tried. There. You really couldn't make it. I mean, look, people. How many people out there are still convinced that somehow Ireland is independent? And I keep saying to those people, why, did you think 1916 was a complete success? And they go, well, no. I say, right. In fact, they were defeated and the leaders were executed. Militarily defeated, only militarily defeated, and the leaders were executed. The sovereign government were put up against the wall and executed.
Yeah, by King George V, were all Irish Republican Brotherhood people.
Yeah.
But I want people to, you know, they talk about the peace, reconciliation and prosperity process, which was founded in 1950 down in Willowbank, where I lived, and the University of Limerick now, and it was predicated on going to 1912, when Sir Edward Carson founded the Ulster Volunteers, and that was the covenant. And in 1913, the Ulster Volunteers broke their own covenant.
Now, you said something interesting about that, Billy.
The guns
that the Ulster Volunteers obtained, Billy, provided for by the money from Rothschild, Lord Ivy,
and Rupert Kipling.
And Rudyard Kipling.
250,000.
But where did those guns come from?
Sorry?
But they were German guns, weren't they?
But the top-class German guns. And by doing it, they broke their own covenant. And as a consequence of that, the Irish Republican Brotherhood, the intelligence officers of the Irish Republican Brotherhood, reported in 1913 what happened to the Supreme Council of the Irish Republican Brotherhood. And the Supreme Council, if you read the proclamation, they founded the Irish Volunteers and Irish Citizens Army as a defence force. And rightly so. Britain, the British government, capitulated to the Ulster Volunteers Army, the UVF Army, and they declared war in 1914 on Britain if Home Rule was imposed by Britain in Ireland.
Yeah,
Germany would have wiped out Britain, and that's where the capitulation of the British government happened.
And how
and
come,
as a consequence
Billy?
In 1914... the Irish Volunteers were looking in 1913, they were looking for volunteers to collect the intelligence on the Crown Forces and the UVF Army. And my granduncle, Tom McGuire, and Sam McGuire, who was secretary of the Irish Republican Brotherhood, volunteered. My granduncle was sent to Calcutta in India to collect the intelligence on the Crown Forces, and Sam was sent to the post office in London. And they collected all that intelligence and brought it to Vaughan's Hotel. And in Vaughan's Hotel, they only had a room for Mrs. Vaughan at that stage. And that's the start of all that. There would have been no 1916. And it was all about Home Rule, and it was all about the British government capitulating to the UVF Army. And not only that, the UVF Army, they destroyed all the Unionist people, all those large estates, which are all working for the Crown of England and all under the Crown of England. They all disappeared. And that was in the consequence of what happened. And that has never been come out.
Now,
it's never been told.
On that, Billy, there's something else that came across my table, as they say, during the week. There was a woman who was, she came to the meetups, and somebody was trying to take land from her. And after some investigations, it turns out it wasn't part of the, inverted commas, portfolios in the land registry, that this land seems to have arrived in her family via the Land Commission.
Right.
And, of course, they're trying to move in on it, the officialdom under the crown, yeah? Now, again, there's all sorts of things going on, and she's not, and her family aren't fully up to speed on the position, so I've been trying to explain it to them, but can you offer anything on that from the original land commission that was established, that was used to divide the land? I think that's how
it was under the sovereign constitution.
Yes, that's how it
happened, because if you read Article 10, is it? The land of Ireland belongs to the citizens of Ireland and to them alone. That's what it says, and that's by the will of all the people. If you read this, you'll see it on that. And it was the sovereign constitution that was used to divide up all the landlords' estates. And that's when King George V, as you know, in 1919, King George V, he declared that Dáil-Éireann to be an illegal assembly. So the question has to be answered then, who did he do a treaty with in 1922, you know? If it was an illegal assembly in 1919, and as you know, but it was under that. And of course, they were dividing the Land Commission. Well, I think it was the congested district board were there before the Land Commission, and the Land Commission was up there beside Vaughan's Hotel. And they were dividing up all the land. They were handing it back to the citizens of Ireland, the sovereign constitution. That's where that comes from. And it's time that people realised it. And there were judges and everything on that. The Land Commission had their own judges. And it was all under. And you know, when we see the sovereign seal and error,
mm-hmm.
it had to have the sovereign seal and error underneath it. That's what makes it legal, valid, and bona fides. And I see the likes of Simon Coveney and Enda Kenny. They just use the sovereign seal now, illegally and fraudulently use the sovereign seal, no error underneath it, and you get it from the revenue commissioners. Who are you paying your taxes to? Who are you paying your taxes to?
Oh, no,
and
that's
who are you paying licenses?
I found something.
A license without error underneath it. It's not the sovereign republic of error. I mean, that's a desecration of our sovereignty.
Well, I found something earlier as well in that big tome of a book, Authority to Tax. And it was talking about the Consolidated Fund. And, of course, I've been saying to people here a long time, the Consolidated Fund, folks, it's all gone back to the Crown. And it's black and white, folks. I mean, it's not even up for debate, you know. You can't even begin to argue against it, because it's just, it's written down in plain, simple language. All the taxes... ever since the Bill of Rights, it's been accepted that the executive do not possess any inherent authority to levy taxes. One of the principles declared by the Parliament then was that the levying of money for the use of the Crown by pretense or prerogative without grant of Parliament for longer time or in other manner than the same is or shall be granted is illegal.
Mm.
And that's in the English Constitution, the British Crown Constitution. It's incredible. Like,
well, you see, Vincent, here, all we have is, they're just bloody chancers is what they are here.
That's right.
And they'll put any old thing past the people.
That's why
and
they had courts of chancery. It was a big bloody chance.
Sorry?
They had courts of chancery. That's why they were chancers.
Yeah, there are chancers. And there still are. But the point is, you get an organisation like RTE, and it is unbelievable. It's just a propaganda machine. And it was set up as a propaganda machine by De Valera.
Oh, you mean Royal Television,
you know,
England?
For somebody like that to stand up and say, oh, the Constitution, or it's unconstitutional, without definitive answer about what Constitution they're talking about. And when they say, oh, the state was founded, they never tell you what state was founded or when. I mean, for an organisation like RTE to deliberately propaganda, lies and deception, I mean, to me, it is absolutely scandalous. Yeah. And I don't see any of those papers coming out. As you know, I'm not allowed to be interviewed by a journalist in any of those papers. And I would like to ask those
papers.
That's
right, you're on the
blacklist. They're all controlled now. And where are they getting their license from?
Yep.
They have no license.
Do you know what I think needs to be drafted for people, especially on the radio and elsewhere, a list of methods on how to act sovereign, the simple four steps on how to do this, you know? How to lose the fear, you know, because people need to lose the fear and how to do this. And the procedures, the first, let's say, 10 steps, like maybe taking the number off your door is a major step. People don't think it's probably a big step, but it is a big step.
It's a huge thing.
Psychological fear of this regime, you know? And return to sender is a major step as well. Return to sender all the offers of conflict. Whether it be someone's fines and loans, penalties or whatever. And income tax as well, if you're a sole trader.
Well, here we go. Listen to this one, Harry. Here's page 206, Constitutional Law, the Central Fund. The principle that all public revenues should be collected in a single fund followed 200 years ago when the Consolidated Fund was first established. It is now incorporated into Article 11 of the Constitution, the 1937 one they mean, that all revenues of the state, they mean pseudo-state, from whatever source arising shall, subject to such exceptions as may be provided from law, form one fund. What exactly is encompassed by the term revenues of the state has not been judicially determined. In particular, whether the term is confined to taxes and similar revenues, e.g. charges for services and payments for materials and property sold, or has a wider application, all receipts that fit the description must be channeled into the one fund, which is known as the Central Fund. So when you hear the people in the Oireachtas, at the Royal Oireachtas at the moment, talk about the Central Fund, they are talking about the Consolidated Fund. The Consolidated Fund...
The Exchequer figures for the Chancellor of the Exchequer.
...was set up under the Crown. Exactly.
Won't people wake up to this, you know?
Yeah, here we go. And this is based on the Central Bank, they mean the Royal Bank of Ireland, in the sense that lodgements to it and disbursements from it are made from the, inverted the commas, Exchequer account, which is kept at the central bank. There are several subsidiary exchequer accounts there, most notably the Revenue Commissioner's account. Government expenditures are made from this fund, and the government can raise loans on the security of the fund. It's the Consolidated Fund. And then they go on to mention the English Bill of Rights, 1689. It's all there, folks. It's not. They don't hide this, Harry.
No, it's not made up. It's fact.
It's fact.
But
it is fact.
It's up to the people to do it or not, you know. It's basically down to the people to do it or not.
Yeah.
And they need to just wake up to the fact, you know. It's all voluntary compliance.
Well, they'll never have anything, Harry. People will never have anything. And to see all the hard work and everything going for nothing all the time, I think it's very sad. All that money eventually ends up in the coffers of the Crown of England.
Yeah, the Consolidated Fund. That's where it all goes, Billy. The Consolidated Fund. Every fine you pay in a court, folks, every income tax penny paid, every taxation on VAT, revenue, all of it ends up in
the
Consolidated Fund.
It's the 21st century method of enslaving the people. Years ago they did it by the banners and the sword and the muzzle of a gun and pitch cappings and, you know, orchestrated famines, which was genocide. Now they're doing it through the banking system. And this is only the beginning of it. And if people don't nip this in the bud, it's, you know, they're going to go down a very fast, slippery slope.
Harry, I'm going to remind you of something. You and I did a broadcast 4 years ago from, remember when I used to do it up in my attic?
Up in the attic, yeah.
And you told everybody, folks, if you don't pull the finger out, there's a famine/engineered genocide number two on the way. And if people can't see it now, Harry.
People didn't believe in evictions.
Yeah.
I said they call them ejectment orders for now, but they're going to call them full evictions.
Yeah.
And that's the case now. People are being evicted from their homes in the 21st century in Ireland. Nothing has changed.
Nothing.
It's absolutely scandalous.
It's scandalous. It's penalty notice. You're still back in the penal times. You know? And if people don't wake up to this and take, you know, control, mass peaceful non-compliance, I keep saying, is the only method. It's the only thing that will work. It's mass peaceful non-compliance. And whether the people who may want to do something or not will do something, who are listening to this, there's a mass of people out there, because we've been at it all the time. You know, the amount of people who are awake is unbelievable. And this is why people need to get talks done in their area. But it's okay. Most of them didn't bother, and that's all right. But it could have happened a lot quicker. And, you know, only for the radio. You know what I mean?
Well, no, I'm going to disagree with you, Harry. Because what you're doing out there, I know what you're doing every day, folks. Harry is out there night and day, in fact, with Christina. And I know you do it. The length and breadth of this land, you're putting stickers up, you're arranging and doing talks, and I want more people to attend and organise the talks that Harry is talking about. Get it done, folks. Just get it done. Don't ask. Don't go check, is it okay if...
It's really done anyway. The information ain't going back, because we hear it on the ground, you know what I mean, from people that we've never met before. They're saying this, and it's unsolicited. They're saying, oh, you mean the Royal Rocks? Oh, you mean Return to Sender? Oh, you mean...
Yes. No, all of those terms.
A notice and law is not a bill. They have it all out there.
They do.
The amount of people, I'm just back from Cork a couple of hours, about 2 or 3 hours ago, the amount of posters that are up on the windows in Cork alone is quite incredible, because Cork, the people in Cork really were the first ones, you know, and Mass, who really could build that onto this and did something about it, you know what I mean? And, you know, it's brilliant to see it. It's kind of you're looking at this stuff.
I need
coming
to say
back at you. You know what I mean? And it's great, because it's really out there now, and it's not going back.
Well, look, I'm going to say this, because Harry was the first man that ever mentioned the word sovereignty to me, and the way you said it to me the first time, I'll never forget, Harry. You looked as you looked at me, and you said, sovereignty, and you did that thing where you looked at me and you had your hand up and you went, no, sovereignty is the key, Vin. And I was looking at you going, that's clearly really important, but I didn't really understand it. And then you arranged it, said, look, I met, you know, Billy McGuire, and you explained to me Billy, and then I interviewed Billy McGuire on the radio. And after interviewing you, Billy, I sat down, and I'm not joking you, I went, wow. Because I'll be honest, I didn't really understand the concept before I spoke to you that very first interview. I didn't understand it. I didn't know anything about it. Other than I noticed Harry saying, no, Vin, you're not paying attention to that word. So you really need to pay attention to that. And I'm kind of, yeah, well, kind of, sort of. And I had so many other things going on. After that interview with you, though, that was a done deal, because I heard you say the magic words, if you will. And the magic words you said, and we're getting close to the end of time here, and I want to say it. You said it time and time again, Billy. It's your sovereignty. Use it or lose it. And that just resonated with me so much. I mean, even though I'd heard Harry say it, I'd heard Harry, but it didn't quite click. It wasn't clicking all the way in. But after that...
Well, not only that, but the proclamation is sovereignty, sovereignty, sovereignty. And I sent you a photograph in Limerick on the proclamation. And Tom Clark is gesturing with his hand.
Yes.
This is your sovereignty. You are the sovereign. Read this document. That's what he's saying. And you have that document. You know the one on
I do, yeah.
Farshfield Bridge?
Yep.
And that's what he's saying. And that's what all those volunteers gave their lives for, that you are the sovereign.
And you see, this is why I can't understand why everybody's talking
go
about socialism.
In the world,
I can't figure out, Harry, and I know Harry will be the same. I can't figure out, Harry, why everybody who claims that waves the proclamation and claims to be a socialist, I'm thinking, where are you getting socialism from? It's sovereignty.
They're being engineered into this, you know, propaganda mindset, you know?
I mean, and they're calling it the Sinn Féin this, the Sinn Féin, and I'm not knocking Sinn Féin here, but I'm just saying the Royal Television England, as I call it, RTE, and I don't mean to take that as a nub of the English people, it's the crown, of course, but they keep pushing that forward, that, oh, they call it, they were known as the Sinn Féin courts, they say. They weren't the Sinn Féin, they might have been known as, but they weren't. They were the courts of the Sovereign Republic of Éire.
That's what they are.
Because they were known as, I mean, I people know me as Spoonogs in a lot of circles, but that's not what I'm called. That's not what my mother and father christened. Actually, they christened me Cosmos, as a lot of people have found out. Vincent was my second name. That's seriously, that's what I was christened. I was christened Cosmos. But, you know, But a lot of people will see me, they're Spoonogs, because I used to play the spoons like in the maggot down the pub. You know, but that's what they've done time and time again. They just keep changing this idea and trying to twist the meaning of the words. Edward Bernays, folks, have a look at what this guy did. Look and think, why do they all adopt this? Because they are deceiving you. They are deceiving you, and they are getting you to agree with the deception. That's what they're doing. They're getting the people to say, oh, yeah, well, we somehow agree to this. But they're confusing you. Take a moment. Achieve some clarity. Go to a site called Your Logical Fallacy Is. Look at the logical fallacies. Learn them. It's like insulation. It's like a, it's like an insurance policy for your intellect. It's like a, it's like a protective layer on your intellectual capacity. Once you recognize people, and every politician uses logical fallacies time and time again, and start calling them out on the use of logical fallacies, and it'll just change your entire life. We're at the end of the show, folks. Billy and Harry, I can't thank you enough. As always, it's been fantastic. Do you want to round off with anything, Harry, or finish off, or Billy, anything you want to say?
I'll just say good night to you, Vincent, and good night to Harry, and good night to your listeners.
Thank you very much.
I know this is probably a bit rushed, but there we are.
No,
interesting the knowledge, though. That's what you say, is knowledge for our people.
And I've said it time again, Billy, when you have knowledge, you're not afraid. You lose the fear when you have knowledge. Mankind feared the dark because we couldn't see what was in the dark. When we knew
you have knowledge, you know the answer, and
exactly.
When you're questioned, you have the answer.
We fear a horror movie, folks, because we don't know what's going to happen. That's where the fear comes in. That's why horror movies work. But if you see a horror movie once, and then you look at it a second time, you don't jump because you know what's coming. The boogeyman is about to jump out now. The knowledge eradicates fear.
Look at what we have. There's no other country in the world that has the sovereignty and has the heart, the symbols we have, and it's not taught in the schools. And, I mean, only for yourself and a few others doing it. I mean,
well,
they intend to.
I think this is the school now. This is the, Billy, you schooled me, Harry schooled me, Mr. T schooled me, loads of other people on the site schooled me. I've been passing that schooling on. I've been passing.
Yeah, but
it
you
on.
Understand sovereignty, and that's what's the important thing, you know?
Well, that's the only thanks to you and Harry. That's only thanks
to
you.
We're all still learning anyway. We learn from the day we die anyway.
That's it. Still, and we're still sucking and blowing.
We're still above ground.
Still asking questions and demanding answers. That's
exactly
what we're doing. But it's up to the people to do this, to put pen to paper and ask questions, demand answers, and put it in writing, you know.
That's it. That's it. BillyMaguire.com, folks. WeThePeople.ie. You're listening, of course, to People'sInternetRadio.com. We'll be here. Hopefully you'll be here. Spread the word. Tell people we're here. We're not just seeking solutions. We're also offering solutions. We're offering education. We're offering insight. We're offering the, if you will, think of it like a gateway to understanding and comprehending what sovereignty is all about. And if you can achieve your own individual sovereignty, if you can enter into it, you lose the fear and you'll be living a calm, peaceful, happy, harmonious life. Well, sure, what more could the body ask for?
That's it. Harmony without the arm and peace without the pieces. Yeah.
And the symbol of the harp is harmony. That's what's important, and we have it.
That's
harmony
it.
Is the symbol. The harp is the symbol of harmony.
And I think I'm going to finish on this song. This is a song called Making Plans for Nigel. And I always saw interesting lyrics in this song from a group called XTC. XTC. And I'm going to finish with this. I say, Ichawa, agus kula sov. You're all born sovereign, as Johnny Mead would say. And don't forget, tune in. Every night we have live radio. Spread the word. We're offering slots. Folks, if you've got something to say, you have a solution we don't know about, by all means, contact us. If you think we're wrong, contact us. Don't leave us in the dark. If you have something better, you can argue and you can say, I have something better and I can defend it. And, well, tell us. We're open to correction.
To hear, yeah.
If you know better, come and tell us, Harry, right?
Sure.
Wonderful. Good night, folks. God bless.
You are.